Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, we sure had some action yesterday in one of the very rare disagreements that Pianchi and I have, or at least a heated discussion, because we agree on so much. This is why I love having him on the show. Not because we agree so much, but because he's brilliant, articulate, and all kinds of other, you know, things and knows stuff that that I don't know. However, yesterday, so we kind of got into it a little bit, so I wanted to give Pianchi a chance. Well, he called right back in, which is good. Pianchi also, normally this is when Shelby or Christian calls in with their report, but neither one of them can make it this morning. So it's you and me. For the first half hour, Josie's going to join us in the second half hour. But we get a chance to at least, you know, talk more about this very controversial bill that I introduced yesterday. And there's a lot to it. There's a lot to understanding it. It's kind of a new idea to disarm the feds. And then, of course, Pianchi's question was, what are you going to replace it with? How is this going to happen? How is this going to be implemented? And my contention was that the first thing we need to do is bring the federal government into compliance with the Constitution, and then we can start working on some of these other issues. But actually, the states and the local governments and the state police and local police can actually work on that themselves. Pianchi, is that a fair assessment of where we were yesterday? And I want to let you, you know, we get another half hour to talk about this to kind of hash it through. Good morning, sir.
Hello, good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm actually pretty good. I miss Shelby's report, though, because I love doing our cruise and travel. I like the variety that we get when we have all these different reporters. And still working on Amber, and I got another report I'm working on. Amber is our constitutional report, and I'm working on a self-defense report, too. So we've got many things constantly in the work. People come and go, you know, they show up, they talk for a while, several months, they go, they come back. You never know what's going to happen around here. I mean, every day is different. Even when I think it's going to be one thing, something else happens to change it, you know, within like 5 minutes. I'm like, okay, we just roll with it.
Well, yeah, I just called in early this morning because I was talking to a friend of mine who was – I told him to call in so he could articulate the January 6th DOJ document that was printed on Gateway Pundit that was leaked to the Gateway Pundit, and it's the FBI confidential human source.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the infiltration of the Proud Boys. So I was hoping he'd call in, like, gave him your number. I think I even texted you yesterday and asked you to contact him. He's very articulate. I've been knowing him for quite some time. Constitutional.
Yeah.
And I was hoping he could call in.
Oh, you did? Yeah, okay. So you texted me his number, yeah. But the best thing is to give them our number on the show here, 215-383-3832.
Oh, I did.
And they can – okay, so he's welcome to call in. I mean, it would be great to hear from them. I'm not as familiar with that particular thing, you know, just because of the January 6th committee. To me, it's an illegal committee. They're it's a kangaroo court. Their job is to try and make it impossible for Trump to run next time, which they can't do. They have no authority. They're making stuff up as they go. And what was interesting was, I think I was reading something that also on Gateway Pundit, that today Stuart Rhodes was supposed to testify. But he was only going to do that if it was going to be open, public, and live. So they couldn't edit, they couldn't chop up, they couldn't you know, make his story, you know, whatever they want. I think Steve Bannon had the same criteria. I think he might be testifying. So after the show, I'll take a look and see if it's on.
That was one of the key things he was Bannon said the only way he testified, he wants to be open, transparent.
Well, it has to be. Yeah. And the fact that they're objecting to that should tell you everything you need to know about that committee. They're not.
Absolutely.
You know, they're not open. They're not. Well, I kind of starting to despise the word transparent. It seems to be a poor replacement for honest, you know, open, direct, you know, transparent. Yeah, you can see through it, but that doesn't mean you can see it. You know, it looks like it's there's still, if something's transparent, there's still a barrier between you and whatever it is you're looking at, whether it's transparent or not. So it seems to me almost an inappropriate use of words. I want them to be open. I want them to be honest, you know. And if they were open and honest, they'd have Republicans on the committee. If the Republicans were open and honest, they'd actually be Republicans and not transgender Democrats. And it would be a very different situation. And they'd have support, you know, you and I, you know, are both been around long enough to remember the Watergate hearings. You know, the Watergate hearings were pretty contentious. It was wild. You know, you had Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Dean, you know, all these characters, Magruder, you know, all these people are popping back into my head now. But the people that were questioning them were both Republicans and Democrats. It was run by Howard Baker, a Democrat. I mean, a Republican, excuse me. Howard Baker, I think, was Senate Majority Leader at the time. You had Sam Ervin, Republican, you know, so, and you had some pretty big Democrats. I think Howell Heflin, Democrat. You know, these were giants in the Senate, but they got along. They talked to each other. They were from different parties, but they didn't care. You know, the country came first, and that's not the situation now. You know, so I posted this on Facebook. It's kind of ironic that – oh, go ahead. I'll bring up another topic in a bit. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the reason why Cummings wants to be live because they can take a transcript and they can restructure it and make it sound like anything that they want.
Well, they can do it anyway.
Arthur,
yeah, they'll do it anyway. You know, yeah. You remember Trump's speech? Trump's speech January 6th, right? Where he said, be peaceful, you know, go celebrate the – in fact, Trump supporters were there. This is what people forget. The Trump supporters were there to make sure the process went forward as is constitutionally demanded. They weren't there to upset anything. They were there to make sure it went according to the Constitution. In other words, every state got their chance to have their electors challenged. That's the part that the coup was stopping that. That's why they had to bring the Trump supporters up and blame them for trying to overthrow the government when, in fact, overthrow the government, as we all know, took place by not challenging the state electors and just forcing the Brandon ones in there illegally. And that's Mike Pence, your traitor, and a bunch of other gelding Republicans and Marxist Democrats. So that's the real problem. And so if they're going to take, you know, the president's speech and make it look like he's advocating violence when he did just the opposite, you know, and that was the live, but fortunately the live speech is out there. So anybody that's interested, like One American News plays it all the time. So here's what Trump really said. There was another thing that was altered too recently. I forgot whose speech it was, but it's like, here's what they really said, you know? And so this is why it has to be live. Not that the left isn't going to totally disrupt it and redo it and edit it and play it a million times incorrectly. They are. Doesn't matter. We'll still have the live one correct. Somebody, you know, some amount of people will record the live speech the way it was given from Steve Bannon and, you know, the Proud Boys and Stuart Rhodes of the Oath Keepers, and that'll still be a permanent record, especially if it's put in the congressional record.
That's right. It's like taking a Once Upon a Time story and changed it and said as if it happened last week. And it's very important that people get to understand what goes on, because if they don't, they would just continue to do it over and over and over again and get these negative results.
Well, I just got a video from Josie. She was talking about it. There was a Marjorie Taylor Greene thing, and what happened was the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee is what happens in the House. Before a bill comes to the floor, it has to have a rule. So that then I know that sounds weird to people, but it's the time for debate. It's how they're going to structure it, how they're going to do it, how they're going to argue it, and when it's going to be voted on. So they make a rule for every bill. And apparently the Rules Committee, the Democrat Rules Committee, announced this after midnight, you know, met at like 1:30. Nobody's there, right, except for the Democrats on the Rules Committee. And the Republicans weren't there, so the Democrats did whatever they pleased. And they've got some bill that's been totally hatched and you know, trounced upon because they met at the wrong time. My solution to this is that nobody in Congress should be allowed to belong to a party during the time they're serving in Congress. It's too much of a conflict of interest because they represent the party and not their constituents. They do what the majority leader says in the Senate and what the speaker says in the House. So there's only two votes in Congress. There's the majority leader's vote and there's the speaker's vote, and that's it. So Congress has surrendered their power, the individual power, to the party and whoever the majority leader. Now, the Senate is different because you've got 50-50. So it's a little bit more interesting. And they have the filibuster. So it's not quite as much of a dictatorship. It's kind of like an oligopoly in the Senate, but it's definitely a dictatorship in the House because Nancy does whatever she wants. Back to you.
Yeah, Nancy's terrible.
Well, yeah.
Very, very terrible.
But she's allowed to be. She's allowed to be. See, the Republicans gave the House to the Democrats, so they don't have a leg to stand on because there were 7 seats that were Republican that they allowed the Democrats to steal after the election, after the count. They said, oh, we better count again. well, let's count again. And they allowed 7 seats, which gave the Democrats the majority and allowed Nancy Pelosi to be speaker. See, there's no reason for Nancy Pelosi to be speaker. None. So how do you trust a transgender Democrat party when they give all the power to the other side, even when they have it? So what are they going to do during after the midterms? You know, people are – it's funny, Fox News being the Democrat suck-ups that they are, said, well, this is what the Democrats have to do to retain power. Well, why don't they say this is what the Republicans have to do to get power back? You know, they always – everything's always oriented towards the Democrats, you'll notice in the news, even in Fox. But I don't trust them. Even if they get power, they might give it away. You know, in the interest of bipartisanship, are they going to turn into a bunch of weenies? I mean, what do you think is going to happen? Are they going to let the Democrats steal it again?
They might want to go around and start clubbing people in the head. You look at California and what they're providing, a neutral safe zone in the middle of the Rio Grande River where a woman can go have an abortion if they so desire. And you got the automatic board of government, and the city of St. Louis is wanting to provide some of their Bring Back America, Build Back America money for women to go have an abortion over in Illinois. So it's just the things that you're seeing is so despicable out of these people and their thoughts and their childishness. Look at the statement that Sotomayor made, saying that we have a radical court. Well, no, the court's just following the rules. What was radical is what you put in place that should have never been put in place.
Yeah, see, I haven't read her thing yet. I've been subsumed of late with actually the last few days with the bill and some of the other stuff going on around here. But yeah, so what exactly did she say? She says the court's all of a sudden radical for following the Constitution. That's her idea of radical? She shouldn't even be on the court.
That's basically what she said.
Oh, okay.
Following the Constitution, reversing things, reversing mistakes. It kind of reminds me if you find yourself going down a one-way dead-end street. Well, at some point in time, you should have stopped, turned around, and go the other way. What you going to do? Keep continuing going forward until you run into a barricade or run off a cliff?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like getting a sunburn and going out the next day, not a consequence. You know, well, let's get burned again. You know, maybe it'll be different today. Yeah, people are weird. There's so much strange stuff going on around here. Do you remember that story of that 10-year-old that was a 10-year-old girl was allegedly raped, taken across state lines, and given an abortion? Do you remember that when we talked about that, I think, last Monday?
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Yeah, I remember we talked about it, that we thought, wait a minute, there's something very wrong here. How do you take a kid across state lines? You know, do 10-year-old girls even get pregnant? Apparently they can. I didn't know that. But it just everything about it seemed wrong. Where were the parents? Nobody's being named in this. Well, apparently there's a lot more sources now saying this is a totally fabricated story, which is what we suspected all along. It just didn't make sense. There were too many details left out.
Well, you know what the question is asked, should be asked. What news person that wrote that article, what's going on in their mind? How could they be so demonic to write a story like this in order to stir up emotional reactions from readers, and the story is not even true?
Well, because it doesn't matter. I mean, the narrative, I mean, journalists, people go to journalism school to change the world, not to report the news. This is why I'm not a journalist. I never want to be a journalist. You know, people, it's really funny when I get accused of, well, you're not an objective journalist, are you? And I said, well, I'm not a journalist at all. I said, I'm an advocate, you know, so I can take a position. But you got to be clear to people. If you're a journalist, you're supposed to journal things. You're supposed to document, report the facts, and that's what you're supposed to do. If you're making up stories, you know, you're a novelist. You're a fiction writer. Well, say so. You know, this is what I want the news to be. You know, in fact, I should probably do a half-hour report. This is what the left wants the news to be. They want the news to be that people are dying all the time, you know, from gunfire that coming from white guys. That's what they want to believe. When in reality, there are black people killing each other in all Democrat-controlled cities in huge numbers. They don't want to believe that. They want to believe that Antifa and Black Lives Matter are peacefully protesting, advocating a leftist perspective, which they think is the natural right of all Americans. They want to believe that. They want to believe so much in what they want to believe that they're willing to lie about it to get there. They want to believe that this country can run on solar energy and wind. Well, it's not true, but they want to believe it. So the real question I have for these people that are deceiving themselves and screwing the rest of the country over is that just because you want to believe something, you know, A, it doesn't make it happen, and B, you don't have the right to enforce things that you want to believe on the rest of us, especially when they're not true and physically impossible. But that's the problem. They want to believe it. What do you think?
Well, you're absolutely right. You see the thing that that Brandon is doing. Mm-hmm. Seems like every day he does something that should be brought up as a impeachable offense.
You have to be legally in office. You have to be legally in office before you can be impeached. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I interrupted.
Well, yeah, that should be made prevalent too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, things like selling oil out of the Strategic National Reserve to members, to companies that's associated with the CCP and also Hunter Biden, mm-hmm. as it has been reported, people should be up in arms over something like that.
Well, that comes in. Remember the criteria of treason we talked about yesterday in the bill? Let me bring it back up again. Where I got? That's my Dutch farmer bill. No,
yeah, the three criteria: treason, piracy, and counterfeit.
Those are the three credible crimes, but there were specific criteria for each one. Let me see if I can find it here. Here we go. Here's my bill. So we talked about this yesterday. So basically, what this is any federal department that is armed with officers trying to enforce a law that the federal government has no business enforcing. Those departments and those officers have to be disarmed, and those arms then go to the civilian marksmanship program. That's what my bill, the Federal Constitutional Disarmament and Gun Violence Prevention Act. So we're trying to prevent gun violence by government officials doing something that is unconstitutional, so therefore illegal. So they'd be acting illegally. And one of the things we did in the bill is put in the three crimes that are outlined in the Constitution: treason, piracy, and counterfeiting. So just to get folks caught up with what we're talking about, treason. In Article 3, Section 3 of the Constitution, Article 3 is the judiciary. Right? That's the Supreme Court. Okay, so treason is a judicial function. Congress can do it, which is legislative, obviously, but also the courts. Treason is decided in the courts. It's not decided by arresting, you know, by law enforcement. It's a totally different thing. Anyway, the three criteria: levying war against the United States, adhering to the nation's enemies, or giving our nation's enemies aid and comfort. Well, I put it to you that selling our strategic petroleum reserve, not just selling oil from our government for our safety, for an emergency for United States citizens, oil from our strategic petroleum reserve, which incidentally is kept in salt domes. Okay. You take oil out, you know, a lot of times water comes in. You've got all kinds of problems. They're not stored in tanks. People think they're in tanks. They're not. They're naturally formed salt domes, and the best way to maintain them is to leave the oil the hell alone. You know, you don't keep taking it out and putting it back in. You mess them up. You mess up the salt dome. Anyway, but selling it to our enemy, China, you know, that they are, that in fact, China is in fact levying war against the United States. Now, are they shooting at us? No, but they're certainly at war with us in business, in cyberspace, in the South China Sea, in navigation and trade, in Confucian centers and spying on us, you know, in buying the Biden family. You know, I'm sure it'd be interesting to see how much impact China had in the coup. And they probably funded the coup, you know, against this country. But in every way, Biden is a traitor in levying war against, you know, he's allowing war to be levied against us by illegal aliens, by China, by Russia, by all these people. Now he's going to go beg hat in hand to the Saudi prince. Oh, please, oh, please, oh, please, give me oil. We got more oil than they do, you know, adhering to our nation's enemies.
Well, there's one thing for sure.
Yep, go ahead.
We got to fight back and be aware of what to be expected.
Mm-hmm. So how do I...
Now you see... Mm-hmm.
Well, how do we get people to fight back? You know, I mean, we write the legislation. We ask that the show be shared. We ask that people, you know, you can listen during your drive time, you know, for those of you that still commute, you know, you just plug our show into your phone or phone into your car audio. You know, we've got podcasts everywhere. it's the simplest thing in the world. It takes less time than pretty much anything. You know, you want to be an advocate for anything else, you got to go to a meeting, you got to go give up your time, you got to ask us, you take the links to our bills, you know, copy them and email them into media and representatives. That's it. And share our show.
Well, they start, when you start hurting them enough, and when they can't go to their restaurants, when they can't go and do their shopping in Macy's.
Well, the country was completely locked down.
Been locked down. You would have figured they would have came back fighting hard, wouldn't you?
One would think if we had the American spirit. But during the lockdowns, people were complying. They were wearing masks. They were taking, you know, deadly vaccines. They were doing all kinds of horrendous things. They gave up their rights. They didn't even look to the Constitution to see if what was being done was legal. People weren't even, they weren't even concerned enough. You don't have to be an expert on the Constitution, but you at least have to be curious enough to look and find out if the, and
well, you
we
know
were
the thing
people.
About that, Greg.
What's that?
The thing about that is when you're not teaching it, then when you bring in a lot of people into the country who's foreign to our foundings, mm-hmm. therefore they are insensitive to that document and mm-hmm. to the protections that it provides. Are they mm-hmm. coming from an environment, coming from a lifestyle, an experience, which is counter of what we have, the privileges we have, and the rights that have been bestowed upon us. So that makes a great difference there, and you're seeing it being played out, especially when it comes down to the education. If mm-hmm. you don't properly educate, if you don't properly attend to that new sapling you just planted, it may grow up looking like the leaning tower of pizza.
You know, it's funny because I like some of the younger folks we have on the show. Like I say, it's too bad Christian couldn't make it. But we've had some great historical chats with him. Amber, we've only talked to once, but, you know, if she can start doing her constitutional report, those are two examples of young folks that really are interested in what's going on. But there's only two. You know, we need millions. And we need people to at least be curious about what they don't know. You know, I don't know, you know, I didn't know a whole lot of stuff until I started looking at it. You know, my education really started after I graduated college, not before, not during. You know, I've learned more since. This show is probably my greatest education, as the things I learn, you know, I mean, I tell everybody else, but I had to learn them first. Most of the stuff we talk about in this show are things that are new to me, or at least in the detail that we talk about them. You know, but...
That caller would be calling from a 706 area code, if he...
No, I got the number. I'm just waiting for it. Nothing's happened yet, but maybe we'll shame them into calling next time.
That's a,
yeah.
No, so it is baffling mm-hmm. that the outcry is not hitting the streets like you see the other sides who are acting and playing a temper tantrum because things are going against their way, which yep. they was illegal at first. The object of right and wrong, lawful and unlawful, just don't seem to center with some of these people and some of these ideologies.
Well, they don't. They've lost their ability to fight back. They're not taught to fight back. They're taught to be subservient and compliant. And this country is being divided into the compliant and the resistant. And the resistant are losing because there aren't enough of us. Let me put something out there that I found in Legal Insurrection, which is another one of my new favorite sites. Protesting Dutch farmers refuse to back down despite police crackdown. So we get Dutch farmers with more courage than most Americans, and that shouldn't be. I mean, nothing against the Dutch farmers, more power to them. But the fact that they're protesting and we're not should tell you something. And the article says, this is by Vijeta Unyal. I should do it in the Dutch accent, but I can't. Because I'm not that good. July 10th, so this is we're talking 2 days ago. Protests by Dutch farmers against climate change emissions cuts continued over the weekend despite the police crackdown. Why are the police cracking down on farmers? Why enforce climate change, you stupid morons? Back to the article. They are protesting against the new government policy that will force farm owners to drastically reduce emissions in compliance with the European Union regulations, which means the British are exempt because they were smart enough to have Brexit to get out of this stupid European Union. It says, as farmers' protests hit cities across Holland, police made several arrests and in one instance opened fire at a tractor convoy. Open fire. The police are shooting people because of CO2. This is insanity. What's going on here? And what are the farmers doing? Well, they want to make food. That's a crime? Yeah, but this whole idea of emissions, you know, they don't understand carbon dioxide. They don't understand that when petroleum is burned, it breaks up into CO2, H2O, which is water, you know, and some other things, sulfur and sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, which eventually turned to sulfuric acid and nitrogen, nitric acid in small quantities when it mixes with rainwater. Okay, we all know this. Not enough to be a problem. At least it was. Acid rain was a problem. It's not a problem now because the emissions are so much lower. But these people are trying to get to zero CO2. Well, then where are we going to get our CO2 from? You know, the whole point of CO2, I'm going to talk to, we got Gregory Wrightstone Thursday, climate geologist. We're going to talk about this. Apparently, the Earth does not make oil, from what he's saying, so I was wrong. So I have a big mea culpa to do Thursday. I have a huge, I was wrong, you know, speech to make, so that's going to be interesting. But the idea that CO2, you know, is going to kill us when CO2 is what greenhouses pump in. You know, if CO2 is dangerous, why do they pump it into greenhouses? Why do they raise the temperature in greenhouses? Why does the greenhouse effect produce more plants, and yet they say it's bad for us? This makes no sense. They're hypocrisy. And now they're shooting people? They're shooting Dutch farmers on tractors for saying that we want to produce food? That you people are idiots on CO2? All because some European Union bizarre, stupid regulation because they want to starve everybody? That's how crazy the world is. And how come we're not supporting the Dutch farmers? Where's the Gelding Old Party? You know, where are the transgender Democrats of the Republican Party to say we're in solidarity with the Dutch farmers? I am. Action Radio is in solidarity with the Dutch farmers. More power to you. Bianchi?
That kind of foolishness is spreading far and wide in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Not just here in the United States.
Yeah.
Makes you wonder if there's something in the air or something in the drinks.
No, there's something in the lack of education. There's something in the lack of character. If you're not willing to protest and stand up for your freedom, you really don't deserve it. You know, I mean, and I'm sick and tired of fighting for everybody else's freedom. I mean, I'll do it because it has to be done. But I really wish we had more support. All right, I got a few minutes here before Josie joins us. Let me play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece right now while I have a chance to sneak this in, because we got Josie, we got Dr. Peter Pry, and Cassandra Sharp's going to join us. We started something yesterday on property rights, which was very interesting. And the question, there's a Milton City Ordinance, which I'm sure other places have, to create a stronger historic district, board to make sure that the historic buildings stick around. I'm all for that. You know, and the question I have is, you know, people say, in fact, Josie's probably going to argue this one too. You know, is my property, I can do anything I want. Well, no, you can't. You know, you can't drive a car over the speed limit even though you own the car. You know, you can't pour hazardous waste on your property even though you own the property. I mean, the property is going to outlive you. The historic house of the 1800s, nobody's around from the 1800s who was born, you know, in the 1800s. They're not here anymore, okay? But their houses still are. So the question is, do we have a right to our history? My answer is yes. Anyway, we're going to debate that in the third hour. It's going to be really interesting. Let me play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. Maybe I should get a shorter one because Josie's going to be here in about 3 minutes. Unless she's too late. Let's do church and state. This ought to be interesting. And back in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments. Insights into our founding documents. Sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. There is no separation of church and state in the Constitution. Therefore, the Supreme Court can't imagine that it really is there or should be there, so they can't create the rule out of thin air and then enforce it as if it actually did exist. The biggest problem with the controversy between Thomas Jefferson, then president, and the Danbury, Connecticut Baptists, a religious minority, is that everyone focuses on the answer by Thomas Jefferson, saying there is a wall of separation between church and state, but they never consider the request made by the Danbury Baptists that Jefferson sought to answer, and therefore where the wall of separation actually is. If you only have the answer, then you can make the question anything you want, including making the question fit the answer to advance an agenda, or denying that there even is a question. The question now is whether the government is free from any of the moral constraints or persuasiveness of religion, such that religion and government are walled off in isolation from each other, so that government can contemplate and implement any power for themselves without any organized religious participation, debate,
opinion, objection, or protest. That is a complete bastardization of the exchange between Jefferson and the Baptists, and it has been used to advance a bogus set of laws and court opinions. The background for this controversy comes from the article mentioned below, which says, "The First Amendment was meant as a limit on the National Congress only. Madison wanted limits on the states too, but they were rejected. State limitations on religious liberty and establishment persisted after the First Amendment was adopted. Religious tests for office remained in place in most states, and Connecticut, 1818, and Massachusetts, in 1833, did not disestablish their official state churches until decades later. The Supreme Court reinforced the idea that the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states, but rather only to the national government in Barron v. Baltimore in 1833. Back to me. Where this becomes especially critical is when the states, not the state as in government in general, but the individual states, establish their own religion and churches because they were not subject yet to the First Amendment. It is in that context that Jefferson is responding to the Danbury Baptists. The key part of the Danbury Baptist letter to Jefferson is this clause. What religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. And these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of free men. The Danbury Baptists, being a religious minority in a larger group of Congregationalists, which was the state religion of Connecticut, were being discriminated against for not being part of the state religion. And because the First Amendment only referred to Congress making no law regarding the establishment of a government religion, but left the states free to do so, we had religious freedom at the federal level, but privilege and discrimination at the state level. That is why the Danbury Baptists wrote Jefferson. Now Jefferson's response makes sense. He says to the Baptists, "Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." Put in modern English, the individual relationship between man and God is direct, and the wall of separation is so that the government never crosses that wall between individuals, their churches, and God, with state religions, state churches, religious laws and tests, religious qualifications for office, etc., etc. However, there is nothing in law or the Constitution preventing churches, religions, and religious individuals like pastors, priests, ministers, etc., and just regular folks too, from exercising moral persuasion, evaluation, and criticism over government, because the free exercise of religion also includes the redress of government for grievances. The wall of separation of which Jefferson spoke only works one way. To understand Jefferson and the Baptists, it's not the wall of separation between church and state, it's the wall of separation between the free exercise of religion and any state-established religion. That's it. Everything else is agenda-driven narrative. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This episode also used Thomas Jefferson's misunderstood letter to the Danbury Baptists from the Washington, Jefferson, and Madison Institute website. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it.
All right, in the interest of time, I'm going to skip Josie's report and just give her a cheer instead. I mean, theme to her report, that is, because there she hasn't had a cheer for a while. So let's bring on Josie. And
hey,
let's get
good morning.
Right to the good morning. Go for it.
Buenos días.
Buenos días.
Good morning,
Dobre
everybody. Dobre utra.
Good morning, Josie.
Well, good morning. Buenos días, Bianchi. ¿Qué pasa? This morning, I wanted to talk about Cubans fleeing their country by the thousands, Greg. This is crazy.
How are they getting out? This is great, but how are they getting out?
I found out yesterday because I was talking to my cousin in Miami. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is they're buying the visa for top dollars. So American people in America are sending money to their families.
Mm-hmm.
So they're buying the visas, and they're going to Nicaragua, and they don't have no problem going to Nicaragua. And from Nicaragua, they come all the way across either by bus or by plane to Mexico, however they're doing it. And once they get to Mexico, they're coming across with the coyotes, and the cartels get in the way, and they either steal all their money that they're bringing or they kidnap them, and a lot of them are dying. A lot of the Cubans, at the beginning, if they get caught at the border, they send them back to Cuba because Biden doesn't want people from a communist country coming in. So I was talking to my cousin yesterday, and her husband's son in Cuba, he came like 3 months ago, something like that. And her husband is the one that had the heart attack due to the vaccine. And he got to see his son for 3 weeks. That was it. He was dreaming after 30-something years that he hasn't seen his son. Now,
wow.
I know, but he was with his son for about 3 weeks. That was it. And then he's dreaming of seeing his grandkid. And this is the woman that was coming across with the two little girls. They made it to Miami yesterday morning, actually. And she was telling me that so many Cubans are fleeing, coming, and she was telling me the whole story. And once the coyotes get a hold of them, you know, you pay them to bring you across, and then they take you through the wooded area. And a lot of times the cartels are kidnapping some of the kids. And they got lucky. They didn't take none of their kids. And I think about 2 or 3 miles, the coyotes let them go loose. Says, just keep walking. You're almost right there, and they lie.
Mm-hmm.
And these people were lost for like 2 or 3 miles walking. Some of the people didn't have water and with kids, and they were lost crying. Some of the people were fainting. Some of the people just didn't make it, I guess. They stayed behind. And it's very sad what's happening to the Cubans. They're desperate. I mean, desperate, and I have sympathy because they've been under a communist regime for over 50 years already, and they're desperate. They're willing to do anything to have freedom, and that's why Biden, if they get a hold of them, the Biden fraud, they ship them back, and it just breaks your heart to see that happening right now, actually.
Well, this is crazy.
Any
because
question?
Cubans, we have a policy where if Cubans make it to our shore, they can stay. You know, and Cubans are one of the few legitimate refugees in this country that can come to this country anyway. I would give refuge to any person from a communist country. Well, of course, we can't take all of China here.
Yeah.
But I mean, but Cuba is in our hemisphere. Nicaragua, same thing. I don't care if those folks get here because they're escaping communism. Communism is a death sentence, even for as long as you're alive. I mean, it's a living death to live under communism. So I have a problem with Cubans coming here. The other thing is that the whole basis of immigration is that the people come here to make the country better. Cubans make the country better because they believe in freedom.
Hard workers.
Yeah. Well, it's not the hard work. I mean, lots of people work hard. That's not the point, though. But Cubans especially, of all the people, you know, in our hemisphere, in the northern hemisphere and the western hemisphere where we live, our quarter of the world. Of all the people that I would love to see here in numbers, you know, if they can escape, are Cubans.
They have no problem with Cubans. Cubans become great Americans.
Cubans and Venezuelans, yeah.
Venezuelans too. And actually, but we're heard in Venezuela. Venezuelans, you know, we have an audience in Venezuela. Okay, come on down. Yeah. I have no problem with that. That's what the refugee policy is supposed to be for. It's not for people in poor countries. Okay, we can make poor countries better.
Yeah.
You know, we can deal with corruption. We can help.
We've
got ideas for how to do that. You know, but
there's
here's
so
the,
many,
here's
the. There's so many. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to switch things around a little bit because the bill we talked about yesterday, the bill to disarm the federal government of any agency that's doing a made up crime that they don't have jurisdiction. If it's not treason, piracy, or counterfeiting, they can't do it. And so one of the things I did was I got rid of the Border Patrol and Customs and Border Protection in terms of protecting this country and put the U.S. military on the border. That's who needs to be there on our southern borders. The military needs to be there because that is their job.
You're
to defend our country
correct.
Against foreign invaders. So you put the Border Patrol into the Department of Defense, you put Customs as far as Border Protection into the Department of Defense, and you leave the Customs duty collection, the money collection, you put that in Treasury, and you put the we would stop illegal aliens immediately if the U.S. military was there. And I'll tell you, and I got confirmation of that because remember we had
You're
Colonel Doug McGregor
correct.
On? Thank you. When we had Colonel Don McGregor, he said the one thing the U.S. military does well is protect borders. He says, you know, how to do it. They've got experience doing it because we protected borders for everybody else's country. So, you put these border protection agencies, you say, well, I would abolish, you know, Homeland Protection anyway. To me, it's like the Ministry of Internal Security. It's like the KGB.
Mm-hmm.
So Justice and Homeland Security are closer to the KGB, you know, in terms of the Patriot Act and spying on Americans and the private army. You know, of whoever happens to be president, in this case, an illegal one, you know, because of the coup.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put the border patrol and put them under the military, put the National Guard under the military at the border, and the border states should be able to use their state National Guard as protection, this problem will be solved. And then we go after civil asset forfeiture, and we have a one-way wall. You can cross back out of this country, but you can't come in unless you apply to come here legally.
That's right.
But think about that. Now, talk to your friends about that. Talk to people that in Central South America, people that you know, or anybody in the United States, you know, especially or like new Cubans. What would they think of the U.S. military on the border instead of the – like everybody else has? I mean, every other nation in the world puts the military on the border.
They got the
except
military.
Us. That includes the northern border, too. Nothing against Canadians, but I'm not protecting us against the Canadians who want to immigrate here legally. I want protection against all the other people that are going to Canada to sneak in. All the terrorists and everybody else is coming there. Yeah, go ahead.
We need a wall, Greg. We need a wall with Canada because there's a lot of Muslims being brought by Trudeau, and a lot of Latinos are fleeing to Canada, and then they sneak in here, and that's not good. So we need a wall in Canada.
Border.
Okay,
go ahead.
I don't care. Every country has a border to connect with the other country, sweetie.
Yeah.
And
you call me sweetie.
Absolutely, what you just said about the military. We need the military at the border because a lot of the Border Patrol are so corrupt. Our Border Patrol that they get paid high top dollar, and they're corrupt. They're corrupt. They're in it with the government, so they're going along with the whole illegal thing. So it just breaks my heart. So many kids are being taken by the cartels, and once the coyotes release him, he's done with his duty because he's being highly recommended by so-and-so. And then his hands are clean once he releases him, and then the coyotes are waiting for a lot of these people, I mean the cartels. It is sad what's happening, let me tell you.
Yeah. Do you think Mexico would object if we went in and basically killed their cartels like we killed ISIS?
We will. Donald Trump will.
Okay, that's not my question.
It's
listen. Okay, don't worry about future. I'm just talking about right now. Would Mexico, do you think, object if our military went into Mexican territory to literally wipe out their cartels like we went into, I think, Syrian and other territory when Trump went in and wiped out ISIS? Do you think
they'd object? Well, they probably won't mind because the cartels are running the whole country.
Okay.
Not this corrupt, radical left communist president that they have now, that our government put him in place, in office, the same way
we
put Zelensky in office in the Ukraine.
Yeah.
Our government put him in office. our
government.
Sure,
that.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't want to be.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into political assassination and screwing around with other countries' governments, even though we did it already. I don't want us
we
in
did.
That business. We shouldn't have done it in the first place. But as far as the
exactly.
Mexican cartels, you know, who do the cartels? If they're affecting our country and they're on our southern border, you know, there's the question, how far can we go? And here's the other thing. All right, let's be really blunt about illegal aliens. If you really want to stop illegal aliens, put the military on the border and people who cross illegally get shot. Okay? And you put up huge signs and you tell everybody, you have a massive advertising campaign. If you try to get in the country illegally, you're going to be shot by the military. If we did that, I guarantee you illegal aliens would stop. Illegal immigration would stop immediately. If we actually enforce that policy. Other countries do it. You try breaking into Russia.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen to you?
Yeah.
Try breaking into any number of countries. Go break into China. You think they're going to treat you nicely and say, yeah, have some welfare? No, they're going to shoot you.
No,
I don't want to be shooting people, but
you.
I want to stop them from coming in. So I don't mean the business of shooting people, but I want to be in the business of stopping them. And that would stop
them. You have to do whatever you have to do to stop the criminals coming in. And,
exactly.
And you know, President Trump, the other day that he was in a rally in one of those states, I forgot which one. It was like a surprise secret
rally. Oh, Alaska.
Rally
he was just in
had.
Alaska. Yeah.
Alaska?
I saw
okay.
that. I posted that one. Yeah.
It was
anyway.
Two places, but one of them was a secret, top secret until the end. President
Where
Trump
was that?
Was talking about the death penalty. Wait. President Trump was... talking about the death penalty for
mm-hmm.
cartels and child trafficking, that we ought to make that a thing, because when a child trafficker, they just take anybody's kids, they're
mm-hmm.
selling organs, they're using them for cream for Oprah's facelift and all this stuff.
Yeah, you gotta get me some confirmation on that. I want to see. I want to see a source story on that. Yeah.
Yeah, you will see it all.
Okay.
So he was talking about the death penalty because 100 Americans
mm-hmm.
get killed due to drugs coming in with the cartels. So the cartels are responsible for about 500 lives. They're just kind of like guessing how many people would get addicted to drugs and eventually die from it, you know, or overdose from opium and all this stuff. But he was
mm-hmm.
talking about this law that we ought to put in place, and I think some other countries are trying to use this now about child trafficking and drug dealers.
Okay, are we talking American citizens? Are we talking American citizens? Are we talking foreign nationals?
No, he was talking about that we ought to institute that law here. And I don't know if another country is already doing it. I'm not
mm-hmm.
sure, but they're talking about it. Because, you know, Greg, back in the old days, if you were a thief and you stole something, they cut your pinky off. So everybody knew that you were a thief. So
yeah, but what if you're wrongly convicted? See, I don't want punishments. Yeah. If you do a permanent punishment, I mean, here's the, let me just
Chico,
say this for a second. Here's the problem, though, because there are so many false convictions. There's so many people in jail now that are coming out because the DNA proved that they were falsely convicted. So you can convict somebody of a crime. You can put them in jail for life, you know, or actually I'd call it a death penalty, death by jail. I mean, this idea of life imprisonment,
mm-hmm.
it's really death imprisonment. But the problem is, if you find that they're innocent, you know, that the government screwed up, the prosecution screwed up, they withheld evidence and DNA exonerates somebody, you can get whatever life you have left back. But if you execute somebody, you know, what is that, 14-year-old? Facebook didn't even let us post this. Youngest executed in this country was 14 years old. All right? You can't tell me that was a good thing to do, you know, because he's 14. Okay, but you know, but even so, if it's a horrendous crime, it's a horrendous crime. I'm not saying they should ever be out of prison, but you know, people go through a lot of changes between 14 and like, you know, 80. So it's a different thing. But it's, if you execute, you can't bring them back when you're wrong.
I understand that, but back in the old days, what
mm-hmm.
they did is, if they caught you stealing in the action right there, they cut your finger right then and there. They didn't have to take you to court. They didn't have to take you to a corrupt government, because all governments are corrupt. But
mm-hmm.
they did it right on the spot. So
right. What if
you
lost your little finger in a farm accident? What if you lost your little finger in a farm accident and everybody thinks you're a thief? Oh, no, I lost it in a farm accident. Sure you did. Yeah. See, there are problems with it. You know, you start cutting off body parts.
They had the rules back in the old days. And
nope,
it worked.
That's wrong.
A long time ago.
That's cruel and unusual.
There's a lot of innocent people that they accuse. They put them in prison. I shared this story with you a couple of years ago. One of our Cuban friends' dad was accused to rape 13 women, and he was in jail for 26 years, wrongly accused. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, we have
it
Jeffrey Descovic. You know, we got a friend of the show, Jeffrey Descovic. He was accused of rape and murder at the age of 17, falsely. Uh-huh. Spent 16 years in jail. Now in fact, you'll see him on our Action Radio Legal Project fairly regularly. I mean, he has a foundation. Mm-hmm. For the wrongly accused, okay? So we take a 17-year-old kid, we put him in jail for 16 years for a crime that he didn't do, which was obviously proven wrong because, you know, we knew the prosecution did what they do a lot of times. They withheld evidence. Mm-hmm. They withheld the exonerating.
Yeah,
the exculpatory evidence was withheld so they could get another conviction because prosecutors base their career on how many convictions they get. Well, they should be in jail for life for doing that. You take somebody's life away, you put someone – in fact, I would do this for prosecutors. I mean, we might want to write a bill on this. But if a prosecutor knowingly, wrongly withholds evidence that can exonerate someone just because they want to get a higher prosecution conviction rate, they should be in jail for life.
Yeah. There's so much corruption in our government. But anyway, mm-hmm. all these illegals coming in, mm-hmm. they're not little princesses and coming in and good people. They're coming in from 146 countries, Greg. That is insane. 146 countries, they're fleeing here. They're like, they know they're going to get everything for free in this country, and they are. A lot of these people that I have talked, they're getting like $4,000 a month for their family, and they're getting like over $300, $400 in food stamps, you know, EBT card. It is insane what this corrupt, fraud, communist, left government is doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Selling
out oil
like
you. But they're letting them do it. The geldings are letting them do it. The transgender Democrats in the Republican Party are letting them do it. They're helping.
Yeah.
So there is no opposition party. There is no opposition government. The biggest opposition, you know, are you know, folks like us, you know, and people that do what we do. That's where the opposition is.
But you know what they're doing, these criminals? What they're doing is they're trying to pass different bills. Like the other day, they passed this bill in the middle of the night, or they were going to, and they posted it about midnight when everybody's already asleep so they won't get to read it. And
tell me about that. I talked about that a bit earlier. Yeah, go ahead. That's actually really illustrative of what's going on.
It's illegal what Biden is doing. He's selling our reserve oil that we cannot even enjoy it ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about that. That's a treasonous act, by the way. Yeah, that's treasonous.
He should be arrested immediately. Immediately. And actually, it's not
arrested
Biden,
for walking into the White House. he should have been arrested for the day he walked into the White House for stealing the election.
Yeah.
You know, but here's the thing, too. One of the things we talk about the show, I'm going to bring Pionkin in a second here. One of the things we talk about routinely on the show is state and local power. Okay. This myth and Jean-Pierre, what's her name, you know, fake affirmative action speaker for the coup, said that only the federal government can have anything to do with immigration. That's not true. The only thing the federal government can do is create uniform rules of naturalization. But anybody at any level can check citizenship. If a clerk at a grocery store can check your age, whether you can buy a bottle of wine or not, then a cop can check your citizenship. That is public information. Okay. And so here's how we deal with this. So all these folks that are crossing, all these Muslims, you know, the alleged, you know, the potentially terrorists or anything like that. I don't care. None of the Muslims are terrorists, but a lot of terrorists are Muslim. Okay. So we know that. But all these folks that are crossing, they all have to live somewhere. Okay. They're all subject to local and state law enforcement. You know, they all want to try and get a driver's license, which they shouldn't be able to. Okay. In fact, citizenship checks are one of the most important things that any state can do in terms of a driver's license. If they don't have it, then that state is duty-bound to arrest that person and take them to, hopefully, the military at the border for deportation. So the states need to get their act in gear. The states need to start using asset forfeiture, which is a local state law enforcement procedure. Now, if they started doing this, then illegal aliens, see, the way to get rid of illegal aliens is you make it impossible to live here. So the government can, the federal government can try and bring all the ones they want. But if various states and locales make it impossible for them to live there, they're not going to be there. Okay. Here's the other big thing too. Plyler v. Doe. You want to talk about a Supreme Court case that has to be revisited. That's the one that that says that illegal aliens have to be educated at taxpayer expense. And the reason they gave, Supreme Court gave, is so they can become productive citizens. Well, I don't want illegal aliens to become productive citizens. I want them to go home. I want them to apply to come here legally so that the Supreme Court cannot order that the United States taxpayer give foreign aid to foreign nationals and a pathway to citizenship illegally. They can't do it. So you want to talk about, you want to resist? The states need to start resisting illegal aliens in their schools. We need this in our county here, too. But I went, we had our school board president, Karen Barber, or superintendent here in Milton, Florida. I was at the meeting. I can mention her name because she's a public official. Right? So, so I was there at the meeting saying, "Why do you?" I said, "How many illegal aliens do you have in your school?" And she says, "I don't know." I said, "Why don't you know?"
She should
well, we
know.
Can't ask that question. I said, "Of course you can ask that
she
question. Those
know.
Are criminals. Well, they're just kids." Well, I'm not talking about the kids. I'm talking about their parents. Their parents are the criminals. And the kids are when they turn 18, you know, and she, and they wouldn't do it. They said, and then you had the minions in the meeting, and they said that, well, the Supreme Court says we can't ask. Well, I don't give a damn what the Supreme Court says when they don't have that power. They can't tell you what you can and cannot
ask.
No,
they don't.
They can't tell you that you can't check on citizenship of parents, but school boards,
exactly.
the school districts need to start doing that. We need to, here, you know, this area cannot call itself conservative if it's not checking whether we have illegal aliens in our school system. So
we
there's
have.
Your problem right
we
there.
We have so many.
Well, you know what,
we have so many.
Bianchi.
Go ahead.
You know, this is the thing that I don't understand. You had two cases that I know of, one in Ohio and one in New Jersey, where you had black women that enrolled their children in an adjacent school district other than where they live and gave a false address. And when it was found out, they was prosecuted. They were prosecuted. So you mean to tell me that people can come from other parts of the world and enroll in your school district where they haven't paid a dime worth of taxes and you can't question their legitimacy? That is really, really preposterous.
Corrupt. This government
well, it's also,
is corrupt, Yankee.
It's also preposterous that your kids can't go to any school you want. If you have a right to an education, as they say, you know, the left says, we've got a right to an education. Okay, fine. Then what if I want a right to an education in a different school district? You should be able to send your kids to any school district you want. You know, this idea that you are condemned.
The great thing is
that
if you don't live in a school district, you're not paying into that school district. But
well,
here's the thing. Is that, well, no, you're not. People that stay in, people in Ladue and Clayton in the St. Louis area, and people that live in the Normandy school district, their kids can't go to Ladue school district. Ladue doesn't even receive federal funding.
That's different. Well, that was my next question. If they receive state and federal funding, then yes, then we are paying for it.
Yeah, but it's only a portion of it. The majority of the school, the funding for your school district comes from your local community. And really, the federal has input in it because these districts engage in federal programs like Title I, free and reduced lunch program. But that don't give me the right to send my grandson to the adjacent school district that I don't even pay into.
But let
Talk
me ask you guys.
Yeah.
Don't
Jesse?
We all Americans pay for schooling in our cities? So you can go to any city.
Even
any,
if you don't have kids.
Any schooling.
Why, you
even
know,
if
by
you
that
don't
argument,
have kids,
what
if,
why am I paying for, you know, my daughter's grown. Why am I paying, you know, why is my rent going to property tax, which goes to a school district that I have no interest in?
Exactly. That's wrong.
So,
that
so
is
payment.
Wrong what they're doing to these people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So either everybody has equal access to whatever school they want, you know, and if the school district doesn't like it, then lower the cost of the education.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Too bad.
You set up a school, everybody has a right to go there. Yeah. I mean, if it's a government school.
President Trump wanted to let people choose wherever you want to go to school, you go to school, period. And that's it. But, Greg, just quickly before I take off here, I wanted to mention – I'm very sad talking to some of my friends in New York City area. The COVID is ninja COVID. It's back, and they're now forcing people to wear the N95. They're not going with the blue mask anymore. They say N95 because it's going to protect you, because this ninja COVID is going to be worse than what we had. These people are a bunch of corrupt, communist, left criminals.
Well, it's marketing.
That's all I can say about
it. It's all part of the government fascist marketing campaign.
Yep.
Ninja COVID? Yep. That's discriminating against ninjas.
Ninja COVID.
That's insulting to ninjas.
Hey,
that's cute.
Do a show like Karate Kid, say,
Ninja.
Ninja COVID. Hey. Wax on, wax off. Breathe into nose, not through mouth. We now talk about the ninja COVID. I attack with ninja sword.
Hey, I know a few words in Korean, but not Chinese. 안녕 하십니까 means hi, how you doing?
Konnichiwa,
Joshi-san. Hello.
Konnichiwa, Joshi-san.
You got Dr. Peter on yet?
That's Japanese. What's that? Dr. Peter's not here yet.
Dr. Peter on?
He should be anytime now. He calls in like a minute or so, yeah. Well, I got a question for him on the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and Biden. You know, well, here's a question for both of you. It was sort of leading to Peter's discussion. As soon as he gets here, I'll put him on. But the idea that the obsession that the left has, they're not against oil because obviously they're trying to get it from all over the world. They're not against oil because they're giving away our oil. But what they're really against is Americans producing oil. This is the part I don't get.
Yep.
So this is an America-hating thing. It's not oil is the problem because they use oil. They heat their homes with it. They generate electricity with it.
Yeah.
They run their cars on it. They fly around the world on it. So oil is not the problem for the left. It's America producing oil that's the problem for the left. That's not government controlled, because electricity is government controlled. It all comes from government utilities. So I don't think people have ever really thought about that, but that's the real fight for oil. Go ahead, Bianchi.
Well, the state should take back control of the land where these operations are going on and remove the federal government from having any input in. That's simple. It just won't do it. And they're trying to, in the federal government, in this administration, in the last administration, not the last, but Obama administration, they hell-bent on killing the petroleum industry. Petroleum industry.
What's that going to do for them? I mean, where are they going to get their oil? Where are they going to get their private jet fuel?
Well, it would create another industry.
Which one?
It would create another industry in what we call OEM that would probably be contributors to the Democratic Party.
What's OEM?
Well, those are what you would call downflow. Oil is produced, then you got downflow in motor oils, you got additives, and you know, things like that. That's a derivative of oil production.
All right.
Greg?
Yeah, go ahead.
Greg, it's sad because this is all about hate. They hate their own country. They despise this country with a passion. And I think, I mean, it's been going on for a lot of years, but I think it really, really got bad when Obama got in office because he despised this country to the point that he wants to see it destroyed all the way to the bottom. And I knew that this years ago, and they thought I was crazy when I was saying that, because Obama wanted to make sure all the manufacturers left the country so we can be buying from outside. And it's been one thing after another since he got in office, and he's behind all these criminals all alone, just like the Sandinistas. They keep choosing other presidents. It was all a fake.
Mm-hmm.
This woman Chamorro got chosen in Nicaragua. But guess what? The one running the country was Daniel Ortega the whole time. It's the same thing here. The same thing here. Obama's been in the background scene doing everything. He never left. That's why he stayed in D.C. and he brought to his mansion all those criminals to come back and work for them. So they've been tampering with president's phone call. They've been doing everything illegal. And this guy spiked America because his father did it, and his father's dream was to see America all the way to the bottom. And that's exactly the plan. So they hate this country.
It's a shame they hate us so much because we could do so much more if they would just, like, leave. You don't like it, go. You know, I mean, why are you making our lives miserable? Why do they think they have the right to destroy our country just because they hate it?
Look,
you know, this is the part I don't understand.
People, they say, if Donald Trump went, we are leaving the country. Yeah, right.
Oh, they always say
they're
that.
Still
yeah.
Here.
Yeah, they're supposed to leave when Ronald Reagan, you know, won the presidency. But they didn't. Oh yeah, I mean, how many African Americans go back to Africa?
Oh, some of them need to go back. They hate this country with a passion, and I say I'll buy you a one way ticket.
Well, they
bye-bye.
Can't go back; they're born here.
You hate this country?
You're talking about people who are born here. You know, maybe have several generations here. No, the only people who could go
it
back to Africa
matter.
Are people that are born in Africa. You know, but the people who are born here. But it's one of those contradictions. Why do you call yourself African American if you're born here? I mean, actually, I'm a Canadian American. I was born in Canada.
Because of the left.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I call them Americans. They're
yeah,
not African American. That's what I tell them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Elon Musk is an African American. He's born in Africa.
Yep, that's right.
In Africa.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad for a white guy.
And he's not buying Twitter either.
So this is interesting. Well, see, now here's what we've talked about this before. We have a bill, our correction of Section 230, that makes liability immunity conditional on not touching your account, your posts, or arranging the results of a search engine. So as long as big tech doesn't do those three things, which is basically everything they do, then they can't be sued. But if they do touch your post, touch your account, or change the order of search engines, then they lose their liability, immunity, and they can be sued. That bill would cure every problem with social media right now and big tech. Right now. You know, Matt Gaetz has it. You know, why isn't he talking about it? Lots of people have. They've endorsed it. Why aren't they doing something? We have a fundamental problem. We know what to do. I mean, this show talks about that all the time. But people have no interest in doing it. They'd rather complain. This is like, you know, as I say, raising complaining to an art form. They're much more, much more into their complaints than they are into solutions. I'm sorry. I don't want to spend my life complaining or being around people that complain. I want to live as a free man. I want to know what
do
that's
something.
Like. And I can't
do
that.
Something.
I can't do that in this country until enough other people get the idea too that we can actually live as free people. Is this country so subjugated and so beaten down and so depressed and so disheartened that they're willing to put up with this? That you know they'll say President Biden when they know it's not true, when they'll say Biden administration when they know that's not true, yet they say it anyway, like some kind of reflex action. What happened to this country?
Yeah, it's a shame.
You got people like John Hannity say he's the president for Americans.
No, he's not. He's not even president. He's a traitor. Anybody you know what they do with traitors in most countries? They execute them. And I'm not saying that should happen here.
Yeah.
No, not at all. We're America. But he should certainly be put on trial for a coup, for leading a coup and stealing the government. And that includes Obama and Hillary and everybody else in the Democrat Party and all the Republicans that went along with him, like Mike Pence, that refused to consider the electors from the state legislatures that were for Trump. He took the fraudulent Brandon ones. Those are crimes of treason. If you steal a government, that is a treasonous act. That is war upon this country. They need to be put on trial for that and thrown in jail for the rest of their natural lives if they're convicted,
which I
think they should be. You know, well,
they will,
but they're not yet.
Jail.
Okay, I'm waiting. Same thing. Taking too long. All right, I think Dr. Price is not going to join us. That's my guess. So we've got, fortunately, I always have, which surprises me. Well, let me ask you, Josie, I got a question for you because we got in the next hour, I got Cassandra Sharp joining us. And Cassandra is head of the Historical Society here in Milton. And you and I, here's another disagreement you and I have on property rights versus historical preservation. So I want to let folks know that that's coming up in the next hour. But if you want to talk about that now a little bit, there's some ordinance. I just read it. I guess it's going to the Milton City Council tonight. But yes, this is a very local issue, folks. I know around the country you're going, oh, Greg, you're talking local again. Yeah. But all you folks that have historical districts, Pianchi, we should get you in this in the St. Louis Historical District and New Orleans and other places that you frequent. I like the idea of preserving our history. You know, and then Josie, I remember we talked this before. Josie said, well, it's my property. I can do anything I want on it. And I disagree with that. So we got a meeting tonight in the Milton City Council.
Well,
Josie,
I'm talking
are you
about
familiar
humongous
with this?
Trees.
Okay,
yeah.
See, I,
I'm talking
see,
about
I think,
humongous tree.
Yeah, see, I think a 200-year-old tree can't be replaced in less than 200 years. So I'd say the tree got to the house first, you got to keep the tree. If the tree was there before
no,
you,
I'm not
the tree stays.
Lover. I love trees, but the tree's not going to rule my life. No.
Okay. Yeah, I disagree with you on that one.
I disagree.
If the property had a 200-year-old historic tree, you know, and I feel the same thing about like deer hunting.
But
you can hunt deer, but you can't hunt the last deer.
Not all of them are 200. There's a property that I really wanted to buy, but there's about 50 trees, and they're not 200-year-old, but because they're old, you cannot cut them. So the property's beautiful property over there by the bridge, 17 Street, Graffiti Bridge, and I cannot buy it. So it's a shame, and the people really want to sell it. And it's just sitting there, the trees on the property. That's about it, because they planted so many stinking trees, you know. I like trees.
I like trees,
well,
it's
like an abortion. Look at Americans. They will go nuts, or they will cut your head off if you kill a little dog or a little cat, but let's murder babies. So it's almost the same thing. I want a home, and
well,
I cannot build a home because of the trees.
Yeah, you know what you – well, I don't – well, if you got these trees in the way, you can't get solar energy.
Yes, we can. There's so many trees. Pensacola is nothing but trees.
If where you want to build your house and where you want to build your house and you have trees that's blocking the sun and you want to have solar panels, well, you should be able to cut the trees down.
I got solar panels in my store. I just bought them, actually, for emergency. Solar panels, I just got a couple sets of those things.
But when the government comes and tells you, oh, you can't cut the trees down, well, why on this argument you tell me I can't cut the trees, but on the other argument you say I got to give up my oil and gas and go to solar energy? Something's wrong with
it. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, something's wrong with the argument that Brandon signed a gun bill, you know, saying that Americans can't protect themselves. We're going to regulate guns to save lives. At the same time, he calls for abortion protests so they can have more abortions. I mean, hypocrisy is legendary, you know, around here. But that's the contrast.
I just don't want to be told what to do on my property, okay? I want to be able to paint it. I want to put grass, flowers. I can have a couple little chickens if I want in the back. Of course, I live in a fancy area. I cannot do that, and I understand that because my neighbors will not allow that.
Why can't you have chickens in your yard? I like crowing roosters. I think it's kind of cool.
I got about over 1 acre here in my house, but I have to go to a farm area, like in towards Cantonman, Milton, whatever. I live in Milton, but this is a nice area.
You can't have chickens in your yard?
Oh,
see, that's crazy. See, my contention is you can't – see, the property outlives you. I mean, you're the owner of property for the time that you're alive or the time that you own it. And then someone else owns it. You know, someone's going to come along later. Either someone's going to inherit the property or it's going to be sold or something like that. So the idea of property ownership, and this is probably something we should talk about now. This is kind of interesting. But you're temporary. In other words, if you have if there's a historic house on your property, do you have the right to basically destroy it and take away the history for everybody? The rights only extend to where you run up against somebody else's rights. Okay, and all rights are individual. I know that. I understand that. And people criticize me. In fact, we had Angie Carter on yesterday talking about this, and this is what sort of started this whole discussion. And people, you know, talked to her after the show and said, "Wait a minute, you know, how can you be for a small government and individual rights if you're against people doing what they want with their property?" And my contention is that property doesn't have rights. It doesn't. People have rights, and property. There's limitations on property all the time. Again, there are speed limits on your car. You know, there are, like I say, you can hunt deer, but you can't hunt all the deer. You know, there's a bunch of limitations on property, especially since, you know, and history. Do we have and I'm going to ask this question of Cassandra in the next hour. Do we have a right to our history? Or do people, just because they own property, do they have the right to destroy, you know, a 200-year-old house? As a judge,
they don't want it. What you have is area that's zoned. If it's zoned residential, it comes with certain privileges that it doesn't have when it's zoned commercial. If you got oil on your property, that oil belongs to you. It does not belong to the government. It belongs to you. You got your air rights.
Yeah, there's zoning like around my business. It's a business, industrial. You can build anything, but now if you come to my neighborhood here and if you want to build a trailer park, they're not going to let you because it's not designed for that. And of course, I understand all that. But,
well, see, zoning is interesting because if you buy a house in an area that's zoned for one house per acre, and then all of a sudden the zoning changes and they want to put eight houses per acre, now you've got urban sprawl. If you bought under the assumption that it's one house per acre, does the government have the right to change that as long as there are people there that object to it? And I would say no.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's usually through the commercial public. But zoning changes with a process which includes the public if they get involved in.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the problems why people don't get involved in those issues, those conversations.
Well, no, but we've got a meeting tonight on it. You know, but I mean, zoning is a huge, you want to talk about local corruption. The zoning laws, now here's where it's interesting. I do not believe in eminent domain. I've done shows against it. You know, the biggest, the strongest property right you have is that the government can't take it. So that I do believe is an absolute right. The government cannot just come take your property. I don't care if they want to put a train through your property. I don't care if they want to, build a power plant on your property. I don't care. You know, they can't take it against your will. So this idea of eminent domain with just compensation, well, it's not just if they're taking it. I don't care what they pay you.
Well,
if
they
don't
can
want to
take
sell.
It if it's for the good of the public. Now, for private,
well,
to go into private hands.
And so there's the disagreement, though.
Yeah, but these cases already have been solved. It's also mentioned in the Constitution under, I think it's Article 4.
Yeah,
which,
no, it's there.
Due process, sustained due process. But if it's to build something that's going to serve the public, they can give you just compensation. You can argue back and forth, go to the lawyers and all the due process, but they will get it. In the same way with
that.
You on
I think that's
aggressive
wrong.
Possession.
Yeah, I think that's a wrong
provision.
How
about aggressive possession? If you have a walkway, a pedestrian walkway going down through your property, you can fence it off and after a period of time claim it is yours. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's called easements, and I think it works the other way, too. If you let people walk on your property for so many years and then decide that it's your property again, it's like it's too late because you let people walk on it all that time. So, yeah, I'm not a property rights expert. I need to get – or a property law expert. You know, definitely like to get someone on that. I figure if it's your property and you want to fence it off, fence it off. But if you let people walk across your property after, like, 7 years, it becomes public. It becomes a public way at that point.
Well, after seven years, it becomes yours. That was one of the issues in the settlement of out east where you had land bearing and you had settlers that would sell on that land and make improvements to that land. After a period of time, that portion that they was on became theirs. And, of course, they had guns to protect it.
Well, that makes a difference. That's a big, Jesse, you had a comment?
Yeah, you know, Greg, on a lot of these meetings, like this lady was mentioning the other day, yesterday or the day before, whenever it was, what happens is a lot of these people in government and having all these meetings, they don't let you talk. They're trying to hide everything. And it's been going on like this for a long time. And right now what's going on in Miami, the government is going around. Some of my friends have farms in the Homestead area, about 30 minutes from Miami. And they're taking the chickens away, and they're burning it right in front of their faces. They're burning thousands
of chickens wrong.
All over Miami.
Why are they doing
because
that?
Because they want people to starve.
That's obviously illegal. That's taking property that doesn't belong. So that's where some – but where are the – where's the mayor? Where's the local member of Congress? Where's, where's PETA? Where's PETA?
Corrupt.
And of course, they don't watch keeping chickens anyway. Yeah, see, this is there are people that are supposed to speak up and do something about this. I'm not sure of the situation. But, yeah, send me an article.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, I mean, the government wants control of everything. So they want everything in electricity because it's created by government plans. So here's a question for you. Should we privatize electricity generation? Should it all be done by private companies? I mean, oil is, you know. Oil, natural gas, that's private. That seems to do pretty well. Yeah, the price goes up and down, but that's a market. But Trump had the price of gas down to $1.85. Yeah, it was about Yeah, well, I remember paying $1.87 was the lowest I paid. But I think 85 was the lowest national average price, okay? So if he can do that through competition and changing the laws, why can't we make electricity? Why does electricity have to be a government-regulated utility? Why can't it be private? Why can't someone come up with a bunch of smaller plants instead of one big one and all those big power lines? You know, why shouldn't neighborhoods have their own neighborhood power plant?
And in Pensacola, SPL just took over the power company that we had here. Now SPL, they're a bunch of crooks. SPL is in charge now. And all the prices for everybody's going up, like you won't believe.
Well,
it's
a government monopoly.
That's what they are.
Anytime you have a monopoly, the government can charge more. And what are you going to do? You can't fight them. See, this is why competition works. Because if power plants were open to anybody to build one, you know, as long as you're environmentally decent, you know, then go for it. I think anybody should. I think a bunch of small plants would be a lot more efficient than a few big ones.
That's right.
You know, if every house had a windmill on it, if every house had a windmill and solar panels for heating and cooling, not for electricity, because it's not really good for electricity, but for heating and cooling, solar is really good, especially in this area.
I don't like windmills. I don't agree with those.
Yeah, but what if you had a little 2-foot windmill on your roof? Do you think you would care if people had like a little 2-foot windmill on the roof that didn't kill all the birds?
I don't want any.
Okay.
Yeah.
But would you stop people from doing it?
No, they can do whatever they want.
All right.
No,
but they're not windmills and wind generators.
Well, that's what
windmills. Windmills and wind generators.
Well, windmills used to be for mills for grinding bread. Yeah, that's right. They are stone ground that's mustard. Yeah, so that's what a windmill comes from, because it actually drove mills, drove machinery. You know, our industrial revolution started with wind power and with water power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now the government wants you to believe that we can live with the windmills and get rid of oil, get rid of everything, and that's going to produce everything. Yeah, right. That's so stupid.
Well,
you
this
know,
would be a good time. Go ahead. Finish your comment. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Say one thing and they do other things for themselves, like you just said a few minutes ago, you know.
Yep. Yeah.
They're against guns, but they have all these bodyguards protecting them. Hunter Biden's son had a gun, and he went through it at the Allen. The FBI or CIA came and got the gun, and it was hush-hush. He didn't go to jail. All this stuff is happening. It's all they can do it, but we cannot do it. That's
it, and they're willing to get rid of everybody's gun and confiscate them if it saves one life. Well, if it saves one life, then we should get rid of abortion. You know, I mean, there's your same logic. So you can't have it both ways.
Absolutely.
You can't get rid of guns to save lives when you're purposely perpetuating an abortion scheme to take lives. It doesn't work that way. Let me do something. There's something I've got this for a while. I got Biden's letter, the insurrectionist, to the oil companies, then I have an oil company response. It's just been one of these things that kind of hangs on my computer. This would be a good time to do it. So let me know what the coup leader in chief said to the oil companies. Too interesting to think of this. This is from the White House. Well, obviously somebody else wrote it, but he actually said, "Dear," you know, he sent this letter out, "Dear executive of whatever oil company, I am writing to you about the high prices our fellow Americans are paying at the pump, and how we can all play a part in addressing them. Since the beginning of this year, gasoline prices have increased by more than $1.07 per gallon." Well, yeah, they're up like four times what they were when Trump was in. Anyway, he says, "Vladimir Putin's war of aggression and the bipartisan and global effort to counter it have disrupted the global supply of oil, the global price." Well, that's a bunch of nonsense, right? "But the sharp rise in gasoline prices is not driven only by rising oil prices, but by an unprecedented disconnect between the price of oil and the price of gas." Oh, really? "The last time the price of crude oil was about $120 a barrel in March, the price of gas at the pump was $4.25. Today, gas prices are 75 cents higher, and diesel prices are 90 cents higher." Well, of course, that's because it's cost more to transport them because we don't have pipelines. Idiot. Anyway, I'll continue. This is what Biden actually sent to the oil companies. This is hysterical. He says, "That difference of more than 15% at the pump is the result of historically high profit margins for refining oil into gasoline." Really, you think it's historically high? That's hysterical. He says, "Gasoline, diesel, and other refined products. Since the beginning of the year, refiners' margins for refining gasoline and diesel have tripled and are currently at their highest levels ever recorded." He says, "To be sure, the shortage of refining capacity is a global challenge." See, everything's global. You notice that, right? A global challenge and a global concern. about 3 million barrels a day of global refining capacity, not just us, but global refining capacity, have been offline since the onset of the pandemic. He says, inhibiting our ability to ramp up supply of gas, diesel, and jet fuel. I'm working with allies and partners and countries around the world to encourage global refinery capacity to come back online. Well, listen, you stupid jerk, why don't you build some refineries here? You have to go global. Just go local. Build some damn refineries, idiot. Anyway, back to this letter. But in the United States alone, oil refineries significantly reduced their capacity during the pandemic. Yeah, weren't they locked down? This is so full of lies, it's funny. He says, in the year before I took office, you mean you stole it, right? Refineries in the United States reduced their capacity more than 800,000 barrels a day, leaving American refinery companies today at the lowest level of capacity in more than half a decade. Well, it's probably because we had so much oil available, you know, they didn't need to refine anymore. That's why the price was $1.85. Moron. Back to his letter. I understand that many factors contributed to the business decisions to reduce refinery capacity, which occurred before I took office. Stole. But at a time of war, I don't think Congress has declared war yet. Anyway, at a time of war, refinery profit margins well above normal being passed directly on to American families are not acceptable. There is, yeah, you think what he's doing is acceptable? He says there's no question that Vladimir Putin is principally responsible for the intense financial pain the American people and their families are bearing. Well, that's a bunch of horse, you know what. He says, but amid a war that has raised gasoline prices more than $1.70 a gallon, which is nowhere near as much as he raised it, historically high refinery profit margins are worsening that pain. So he's basically blaming the oil companies for him taking away oil from the oil companies. This is a fascinating contradiction, right? Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Greg. You're absolutely right, because the black girl that's working for Biden and the reporters are asking her, what's going to happen about this oil? We're selling the oil. Oh, I don't know. You need to go ask the oil companies. We don't get involved in that. It's like, how stupid. You know, they sound so ignorant, like a school little child. Anyway.
Well, I mean, she's terrible at the job, but I have a feeling Michelle Obama is running the Human Resources Department at the White House, and she's replacing the entire staff with black women. And so if you look at anybody who's been appointed to anything in the last year, it's a black woman. Nothing against black women. You know, they're really competent black women. They just don't happen to be in the Biden coup. That's all. They're picking some of the worst possible people. Just Jackson, you know, who, they've got a bunch of other people. They're just awful. So there, I think that's Michelle Obama. She's running the HR department.
Yeah.
Okay. So the only person left, the only white person left will be Biden. Everybody else will be black women before the end of the their insurrection.
He's just a puppet. He's the puppet being used by Obama, because Obama's running our country with Susan Rice and Michelle.
But you notice that all the new people appointed to Brandon's insurrection are all black women? Again, nothing against black women, but I just find it fascinating that all the people, you know, I don't think anybody appointed, you know, after the first 6 months that wasn't a black woman. I just find that interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody else has noticed.
Yeah.
All right, back to the list. He says, your companies, he's talking to the oil, this is actually going to oil company executives. You can imagine how they'd laugh their asses off when they got this, right? He says, your companies and others have an opportunity to take immediate action to increase the supply of gasoline, diesel, and other refined product you are producing and supplying to the United States market. Well, after you get rid of the pipelines and you shut down the markets and you shut down the trucking and you shut down the exploration, you shut down the leases, you shut down everything else, then says that the companies have the opportunity to take actions to increase the supply? Oh, please. And how are they supposed to do that? All right. Then he says, this is the Brandon letter, prices for your product where they are today, you have ample market incentive to take these actions. And I recognize that some of you have already begun to do so. I also encourage you to continue maintaining and expanding fuel supply safely. This is a bunch of crap. All right. And then he says, I've got two more paragraphs. We're almost done. He says, in addition, my administration, insurrection, is prepared to use all reasonable and appropriate federal government tools, I love that word, and emergency authorities to increase refinery capacity and output in the near term. Of course, without actually building a refinery, right? And ensure that every region of the country is appropriately supplied. Well, there's this nationalization of oil, right? So they're going to control the supply and see who gets the appropriate amount of oil. Did you catch that little communist marketing there? Right. He says, that's what they want to do. They want to nationalize the oil companies. I think that's what's behind a lot of this. So they're under the control, like the electricity, the power generation is under government control. He says, already I have invoked emergency powers to execute the largest strategic petroleum reserve release in history. For no reason, right? Expand access
to E15 gasoline with 15% ethanol, which makes engines, you know, shred, and authorize the use of the Defense Production Act to provide reliable inputs into energy production. I am prepared to use all tools at my disposal as appropriate to address barriers to providing Americans affordable, secure energy supply. Well, except actually letting the oil companies produce oil. This is the hypocrisy, right? So I'm reading this, I'm laughing because everything he says is wrong, because everything is a government solution. 15% ethanol? Do you want 50% salad dressing in your car? I don't. Pianchi? Josie?
Well, what's going to happen? What needs to be done? The states need to stand up and draw their lines. You're going to have states like Massachusetts. You're going to have states like Louisiana and Alabama. They're going to have different views and let it be. Because this other method that you're trying to achieve, these equalities or equity, just not working. All states are not going to fall in place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to have to come down to drawing the lines.
Yeah. Josie? Almost done with this letter.
Sorry, I got you on mute.
Oh, I agree with
Bianchi. Definitely. Yeah. Go ahead and continue.
I do too, yeah. He says, this is the Brandon insurrection letter to the oil companies. He says, the crunch that families are facing deserves immediate action. Your companies need to work with my administration to bring forward concrete near-term solutions that address the crisis and respect the critical equities of energy workers and fence-line communities. All right, I didn't think that's a real sentence. But think about that. Your companies need to work with my administration. Is that not the nationalization of the oil companies? When do companies have to work with any government administration, legal or illegal, but especially an illegal insurrection? Why would any company be compelled to work with them? That's not their job. Government has no place to say that unless the companies are violating the law somehow. I mean, legitimate law, not the things that Brandon's making up with executive orders. They have no power to nationalize these companies and tell them they have to fall in line and do what they're told and set the prices as Brandon wants the prices set. That's fascism. Has anybody noticed that? I don't think the media didn't pick up on this letter. I did. So I'm reading it now. It's been hanging around for a couple of weeks. Let me finish. He says, I have directed the Secretary of Energy to convene an emergency meeting on this topic and engage the National Petroleum Council in the coming days. In advance of that, I request that you provide the Secretary with an explanation of any reduction in your refining capacity since 2020. Why should they have to do that? Right? Why do they have to explain the reduction in refining capacity? This is a private company. They can do what they want. I mean, the reduction in refining capacity is because they won't let them drill for oil. I'll tell you right now what reason is, but they won't say that. Right? And he says, and any ideas that would address the immediate inventory price and refining capacity issues in the coming months, including transportation measures to get refined product to the market. Well, he's already cut off the ability to get the refined product to market. And earlier, he blamed Putin. So why is he holding the oil companies responsible if he's blaming Putin? That's a contradiction. Then in the last paragraph, he says, the lack of refining capacity and resulting unprecedented refinery profit margins. So wait a minute. If you're not refining, it's a contradiction too, right? He says, are blunting the impact of the historic action my administration has taken to address Vladimir Putin's price hike and are driving up costs for consumers. So he's mad at Putin. He's blaming Putin for things that he's doing. He's the one that jacked up the price. Then he says in the conclusion, I appreciate your immediate action to this issue and your efforts to mitigate the economic challenges that Vladimir Putin's actions have created for American families. Sincerely, Joseph R. Biden. Isn't that a bunch of crap?
That's what communists do. They blame others for what they are doing themselves.
Yeah.
You know, that's what.
Yep.
The Biden fraud are saying they're blaming Russia, they're blaming Ukraine, they're blaming everybody for the food. And it's a lie. Yeah. And some of the people don't have knowledge or they don't know exactly what's going on. They believe it.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lady arguing with me the other day. She said, no, it's the Ukraine. That's why we don't have food. That's why we're going to run out of food. I said, no, ma'am. It's our government. And then I had a big guy like 6'2", like a 4XL, upset with me, walked out very angry at me because he said he loves President Biden. I said, yeah, really? Do you love that he's destroying our country? And he was very angry, upset at me. And I had a couple of people. And at the end, when this guy left, these people came to me and they said, I love the way you stood for our country.
Yeah, did they stand for their country?
Like it. And
did
like,
they stand
huh?
with you? Did they stand with you or did they watch you do it yourself?
No, they didn't stand with me because, you know, people are afraid to get involved or anything. But I didn't want them to get involved. I can handle myself.
Yeah,
but
that's not the point, though. I mean, I know you can, and I'm proud of you for doing so. But the thing is that the people, they can't be scared of the leftists. That's how leftists win. You know, if people aren't backing you up,
I don't.
If I was in the store with you, I mean, I'd let you do it because, you know, it's your store. But I'd be right with you. And I'd be saying, in fact, I'd be having my own words, you know, because you got to stand for your country against these communists.
Yep. So, and, you know, I'm nice. I'm not cussing, cursing because I don't do that. I'm a Christian woman. And God tamed my tongue in 1998, you know, so I don't do that. But in a nice way, I let him know that he was wrong. And he said, oh, I don't want to talk about politics. I said, right, why? Because you don't want to hear the truth. And I told him like that.
They didn't want to talk about politics and once they've given their point of view.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let me get your response here. This is go ahead. Let's see if
Greg, but you know what, Greg? These people, and he was a big black guy, too. You know, I'm not afraid of anybody. I don't care what color you are. I'm not afraid.
Well, you're discussing viewpoint, not, you know,
fuck.
Bodybuilding. So, yeah, you shouldn't be afraid of it.
Yeah. But what happens is they don't believe in agreeing or disagreeing. You know what I mean? We're in America. This is a free country. You can disagree or don't agree. I don't care, you know. But he just got hostile and just angry and upset. And his wife had a bunch of uniform that she was going to buy, and she was almost in tears when she looked at me and he said, come on, let's get out of here. She's not getting none of my money. I said, bye. I don't care. Anyway, that's it.
Yeah. Jackie?
What do you got the news media running these stories like this one? Migrants, people of color, vulnerable to white extremist groups along U.S.-Mexican border. Then they go into the story and say, practically all the groups are white, and they're racializing. You got United States citizens that's concerned of the illegal activities going on at their borders.
Wait a minute. I'm a white guy. How come they haven't contacted me? Where are all these white extremist groups?
Oh, you're funny.
You know, I'm a white guy with a radio show, and they haven't contacted me. Not one white supremacist has called this show and said, I'm a white supremacist, and let me tell you why you should be a white supremacist, too. Any white supremacist or white nationalist or white extremist, call the show right now, 215-383-3832. I'm curious to know what you know and why you think that you know, a white guy like me should become a white supremacist, because quite frankly, I think you're full of it, and I'll be nice. but you know, so where are they? And who are these white supremacist groups in this article? Can they name any?
American citizens who have seen a need to take matters into their own hands.
Well,
these
we definitely have that.
These states should be doing just that.
Yeah. But who are the white supremacist groups? I want to know who they are. I don't know any.
But, Greg, there's a group that we're going with masks covered completely, fully, and with Trump's gear, and I think, I don't know what they did up north, but the police caught them, and they took their mask off, and they're like neo-Nazis here in America. It's a huge group pretending like they're Donald Trump, white supremacist, yeah. So it's, and also in the D.C. January 6th, you're going to hear coming up, a lot of them were brought in from Ukraine also. So it's crazy. This whole thing is crazy. This whole racial and the whole hate, white. I keep hearing a lot of the white folks, they're blaming white. And I'm like, do you hate your skin? Do you hate yourself? You hate white people and you're white, you know?
That's where guilt takes over. Yeah.
You see Josie? You see the same thing with what has been called blacks also, really was they mix are mulattoes, and they're calling whites all quarter. And I say, damn, you half white. So how do you how do you play that out in the morning when you shave it?
Yeah. And me, I'm a member of the Santa Rosa Creek tribe, which makes me Native American. My grandmother on my father's side was part Egyptian, which makes me Arabic, which makes me a person of color, which makes me Middle Eastern. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's what the hell? I'm a person of color.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much as some people. You know, but I look like a white guy. But I'm not a pure, you know, white European person at all. Not even close. Mm-hmm. So what? You know,
but,
I mean, I say that because it
white.
Amuses me. I'm pretty white. I really am pretty white. Yeah, that's the English
you're
side.
You're pretty white.
The English, yeah, the Greek side, the Spartan side doesn't dominate. So the Spartan side and the Egyptian side are kind of suppressed. But the English, you know, the lily white English side seems to predominate. Don't ask me why. Hey, I was born this way. What are you going to do, right? That and the nerd factor.
You're
I got the
stuck.
Nerd factor, really.
You're
I got the nerd.
Stuck with yourself.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm happy, you know. I'm the nerd warrior.
Yeah.
You know, I got a microphone. I got a brain. I can use them. All right. Let me This is fun. Let me give you the response from Chevron CEO Mike Wirth, W-I-R-T-H. This is from June 21st. This is like the day after the insurrectionist who's currently occupying the White House tried to pretend like he knew something about the OSIS. In a letter to President, well, I can't even say it, in a letter to the person who thinks he's President Biden, we have, "Dear Mr. President, thank you for your letter dated June 14th, 2022. It was a week later. Okay. As industry leaders, academic experts, and numerous policymakers have pointed out, there are no easy fixes nor any short-term answers to the global supply and demand imbalances aggravated by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Addressing this situation requires thoughtful action and a willingness to work together, not political rhetoric. I look forward to meeting with Secretary Granholm," Secretary of Energy, but that woman's an idiot, right? "And I'm hopeful for a constructive conversation about actions to address both near-term issues and the longer-term stability of energy markets." Okay, so there's his original BS suck-up opening. Make sense? He's doing he's got the formality out of the way in the first paragraph. Yes, no, maybe?
I'm not sure.
Okay, well, let me give you the second paragraph. "In 2021, Chevron produced the highest volume of oil and gas in our 143-year history. In the first quarter of 2022, our U.S. production was 1.2 million barrels per day." This is one company, right? "Up 109,000 barrels per day from the same quarter a year earlier. In the Permian Basin alone," that's P-E-R-M-I-A-N, Permian Basin alone, "we expect production to approach 750,000 barrels per day by the end of the year, an increase of more than 15% from 2021. And Chevron's U.S. refinery input grew to 915,000, it's almost a million, right? 950,000 barrels per day on average in the first quarter of this year from 881,000 the same quarter last year." So there's your, that blows out of the water, that idea that refineries have cut back production. They haven't. They've increased it, which I find interesting. Now, where they get the oil from, I don't know. But apparently, refining capacity is at maximum, all right? Then he says, "In addition to increasing American oil and gas production, Chevron is also investing $10 billion to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and scale new advanced energy technologies." Well, that's kind of stupid. "Like carbon capture and hydrogen, along with growing our renewable liquid fuels production capacity to 100,000 barrels a day by 2030. America will lead in these critical new industries, creating jobs at home and exporting them to the world to meet energy and climate objectives." Have you folks heard about this new thing, renewable liquid fuels production? You guys know about that?
No.
Pianchi?
No, but you know what you would – go ahead.
We'll see if Pianchi knows. Do you know what they're talking about?
He's on mute.
No, I don't. I never read it.
Okay. I looked into this a little bit,
a
couple of weeks ago. I'll see if I can remember it. Renewable liquid fuels. Apparently, they're growing algae, and they're turning algae into fuel. So as you know, algae is one of the big bases of what they call fossil fuels. You know, billions upon billions upon billions of tons of algae over millions upon millions of years compressed, you know, turns into oil. Okay. Well, if they can bypass the millions of years and the heat and pressure and make it themselves from algae directly, that's a renewable fuel source. You basically can grow our gasoline for our cars. That's what renewable liquid fuels production is. And if they're producing 100,000 barrels a day by 2030, that's a tenth of our oil supply from stuff that we're growing, which means you don't need ethanol. This can immediately replace ethanol. Sorry, Archer Daniels Midland. Your days of stealing money from us for your corn oil are limited. Okay. And he says, America will lead in these critical new industries. So they're already advanced. I mean, Brandon doesn't even know anything about this. And I don't think the administration knows anything about this. In their obsession with solar and wind, they're actually growing our own fuel. How's that for a thought? Let me continue. Yeah, I mean, but see, nobody talks about this because nobody read this letter in the media except me. You know, everybody read Brandon. Yeah. They quoted from Brandon's letter, but no one quoted from the response. Well, that's why I did that piece on the, you know, it's like when I talked about the Danbury Baptist and that Jefferson thing I did for Santa Rosa Volunteers. I actually read the Danbury letter asking the question that Jefferson answered. This isn't Jeopardy. You don't give the answer first and have to guess the question. That's kind of stupid, you know, and yet that's what everybody does with the Danbury Baptist. They take Jefferson's answer, which is completely meaningless without the Baptist question. That's why I made that piece. Moving on. American oil and gas supplies are among the most efficient, responsibly produced, and lowest carbon intensity supplies in the world. What that means is Brandon is actually making the situation worse by buying dirty Saudi oil as opposed to American clean oil. So much for his environmentalism. He says that roughly 15 kilograms of CO2 equivalent per barrel, Chevron's Permian Basin carbon intensity is some two-thirds lower than the global industry average. U.S. Gulf of Mexico production has carbon intensity just a fraction of the global industry average. Increasing American production will offset barrels produced in other parts of the world that may not support America's energy security, economic competitiveness, or environmental goals, which means we produce oil better, it's cleaner, we use it more efficiently, and we can do it better, creating more jobs, more income, and more wealth here to keep our supply chain and our country going. That's what he's saying. And what's Brandon doing? Shutting off American oil and going begging to Saudi for their dirty oil. And this is never reported. I'll go on.
And you know, some people know about it, and they don't care. They don't care. They're still like that black guy arguing with me. I thought he was going to hit me in a minute.
Well, because you challenge his assumptions. You challenge where he lives. You can't do that to the left because they live with their assumptions.
No.
Their assumptions are their life. No. Their misconceptions are their life. You know, try having a leftist go through life with their lies. They can't do it.
Yeah.
That's why it's so vital to them.
They stick with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, not only is it vital to them for their lies, but they have to make you believe their lies too. Otherwise, they have to kill you.
Yeah.
And that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
That's why the left puts people in concentration camps and gulags and re-education camps because they are so insecure and they're so weak in their beliefs that they believe that you have to believe what they believe too, even if it's wrong. Even if they know it's wrong, you still have to believe it. And if you don't believe what they believe, you have to be killed. I mean, that's pretty obvious because that's what the leftists do. You look at any country where people don't believe what the leftists believe, they're killed.
Right. Well, look at the Muslim. If you don't believe in their religion, you're banned or they put you in jail or they kill you, you know.
That's why Muslims and Marxists get along so well. You know, one's a theocracy and the other is a dictatorship. But it amounts to the same thing, absolute power.
Same thing.
All right, back to the letter. This is fun. He says, I want to be clear that Chevron shares your concerns over the high prices that Americans are experiencing. Yeah, I'm sure they do. And I assure you that Chevron is doing its part to help address these challenges by increasing capital expenditures to $18 billion in 2022, more than 50% higher than last year. It's actually good that they're increasing refining capacity. We're going to probably need it with all the illegals coming in, but that's another story. He says Chevron and its 37,000 employees work every day to help provide the world with the energy it demands and to lift up the lives of billions of people who rely on those supplies. Think about this for a second. Chevron has 37,000 people, yet we have 200,000 armed agents in the government that don't need to be armed, that are armed illegally. Think about that. Chevron. Now, who's producing more for this country? 200 armed federal agents that aren't allowed to be armed by the Constitution or 37,000 Chevron employees, you know, helping keep the country going by supplying us with oil?
It's Chevron owned by Venezuela, right?
Well, no, Chevron's not owned by Venezuela.
I wasn't sure.
No, Chevron. Chevron is one of the former Rockefeller companies known as Standard Oil.
Mm-hmm.
So when Standard Oil was broken up, in the antitrust, and I think this was the right thing to do, they became, I think, Atlantic Richfield, Mobil, Texaco, Sunoco, Exxon, who else is the seven of them? Chevron and a few others. Gulf.
What about Shell?
No, that's Dutch. That's from Holland. BP is British Petroleum. That's from England. And Royal Dutch Shell In fact, Shell is interesting because Shell used to get their oil. They got their oil through the 1900s from Indonesia, and it was called the Dutch East Indies. So where did Japan go when they needed oil? Indonesia and the Dutch East Indies.
Indonesia.
Hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
So when Japan needed oil in World War II, you know, they didn't come to the Gulf of Mexico, obviously. You know, they went to the Dutch East Indies. So where all that Shell? So where Shell gets their oil from? You know, that's where the Japanese invaded because they needed the oil. Because we embargoed their oil. Or we embargoed our oil, not their oil, but we embargoed our oil.
And we protect all those countries, Greg. We protect all those countries, but we cannot protect our own.
Well, we shouldn't be protecting those countries. And actually, we can't protect those countries. Now, we should talk about Shinzo Abe just for a minute here. I'm going to put this. I didn't know that Shinzo Abe created the Quad, the alliance between Japan, South Korea, Taiwan. Japan, South Korea, India, and Australia. That's the Quad, those four countries. Now, what he should have done, I wish he had, is had them go nuclear so that Japan, South Korea, India already has nuclear weapons. India should have shared them, you know, as part of their Quad with Australia, Japan, and South Korea, because that's how you balance the power. You know, get this idea of a nuclear umbrella is a bunch of nonsense. Anyway, I'm sorry he got killed because he's one of those leaders I really respected. I like Shinzo Abe, so I'm sorry he's gone. It's fascinating they had a gun. In Japan, because you know, I have a friend who's from Japan, and they're all horrified that a gun crime happened, you know, to their former prime minister. But if you look at the gun, you guys remember the movie In the Line of Fire where John Malkovich makes a clay model gun out of plastic so he can get it past the metal detectors?
No.
You look at the gun that killed Shinzo Abe. It's very similar to that one. Yeah, that's a special investigations thing. All right. Let me continue on. We're almost done with this letter with the oil executive. Okay. Chevron has 37,000 employees work every day to help provide the world with the energy it demands and to lift up the lives of billions of people who rely on these supplies. Notwithstanding these efforts, your administration, read coup, has largely sought to criticize and at times vilify our industry. That's really a telling statement, right? He says, these actions are not beneficial to meeting the challenges we face and are not what the American people deserve. Yeah. Good for you. He says, while today's geopolitical situation is contributing to this energy crisis, in other words, the war in Ukraine, bringing prices down and increasing supply will require a change in approach. You have called on our industry to increase energy production. We agree. Let's work together. The U.S. energy sector needs cooperation and support from your administration for our country to return to a path towards greater energy security, economic prosperity, and environmental protection. In other words, go back to the Trump policies. That's what he's saying. Trump policies worked, idiot. Then he says, we need clarity and consistency on policy matters ranging from leases and permits on federal lands. Yeah, because, you know, Brandon's taken those away, right? Just to the ability to permit and build critical infrastructure. So in other words, Brandon was they were saying, well, you can have a lease, but you can't have a road to bring in oil equipment to drill on that lease. See, that's how they stopped it. They didn't tell people this, right? This is one of the things you got to know if you know the news. And this is what he talks about when he says to the ability to permit and build critical infrastructure, that's what he means. So they were getting leases out there, but they weren't allowing oil companies to use the land that they were leasing. Okay, well, so that's why they weren't buying the leases, right? Then he says to the proper role of regulation that considers both costs and benefits. Both Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump brought cost-benefit analysis to regulation. If the cost was too high, you couldn't have the regulation. Obama, Clinton, and all the Democrat, you know, socialist Marxists, they don't care about the cost. They just want the regulation, right? That's the difference. This is a really important letter. I'm surprised nobody else covered it. He says, many of these elements are described in our industry's recently released 10-point plan. Well, I think I'll read that in a minute, too. He says, most importantly, we need an honest dialogue on how to best balance energy, economic, and environmental objectives. One that recognizes our industry is a vital sector of the U.S. economy and is essential to our national security. Yeah, see, Brandon never talks about that. We can only meet these challenges by working together. Chevron will engage in this week's meeting with Secretary Granholm. I encourage you to also send your senior advisors to this meeting so they too can engage in a robust conversation. Your, quote, whole of government philosophy is addressing major issues should apply here too, as a comprehensive approach is best to address the energy needs of our nation and of our allies. The American people rightly expect our country's leaders and industry to address the challenges they are facing in a serious and resolute manner. We are a willing partner in that endeavor and trust your administration will be the same. And that's sincerely Mike Wirth, Chairman of the Board and Chief Executive of Chevron. What do you think?
Pretty
comments
good.
To your friends? Yeah, it is pretty good. But he really blasted Brandon.
Mm-hmm. They did.
It's not Ukraine. We are producing what we can. It's not Ukraine. You've made it impossible for us.
Not Ukraine.
You screwed the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
You stopped the oil leases. You won't let us refine. You got too many regulations. And you're blaming all the wrong people. Well, okay, so let's pull up the American Petroleum Institute. 10 in 2022, 10 policies to unleash American energy and fuel recovery. Y'all ready? We've got about 5 minutes before we switch topics.
Sure.
Here we go. One, lift development restrictions on federal lands and waters. Well, my cure is the fact that those aren't federal lands. Those are actually state land. And we proved that with Roger Roots about 2 months ago. Two, designate critical energy infrastructure projects. Congress should authorize critical energy infrastructure projects to support the production, processing, and delivery of energy. You know what that means? Pipelines and refineries, okay? Fix the NEPA permitting process. I don't even know what it is. The Brandon insurrection, my words, should revise the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, process by establishing agency uniformity in reviews, limiting reviews to 2 years, and reducing bureaucratic burdens placed on project proponents in terms of size and scope of application submissions. Yeah, there you go. Better permitting process. Number four, accelerate LNG exports and approve pending LNG applications. That would be liquefied natural gas. It says Congress should amend the Natural Gas Act to streamline the Department of Energy to a single approval process for all U.S. liquefied natural gas projects. Liquefied natural gas is huge. But to liquefy natural gas, you have to freeze it. It's going to be really cold. And so you see those trucks carrying LNG? You know, that's sub-zero. That's like, what, I don't know, 150, 200 degrees below zero? When I'm talking about really cold, I mean really cold. Here's another one. Number five,
Is that the liquid gas you were talking about earlier that they're making, or no?
No, that's different. Liquid renewable.
Oh, that's
algae-based. Liquid natural gas is where you take natural gas, and you make it so cold that it goes from gas to liquid. Okay? You know how water vapor, you know how water vapor, when it cools, turns into rain? Clouds turn into rain when it gets cooler? Okay. Rain turns into ice when it gets cooler. Same thing with natural gas, except it has to get a whole cooler. Yep, same thing. Yep. Yeah, that's how things change state, from solid to liquid to gas. Usually it's a temperature increase. Make sense? You can turn rocks into liquid if the temperature's high enough. Look at a volcano. That's liquid rock.
Yeah.
And it goes back to solid when it cools. Change of state, temperature. All right. Number five, unlock investment and access to capital. The Securities and Exchange Commission should reconsider its overly burdensome and ineffective climate disclosure proposal. This is huge, actually. And the Brandon insurrection, my words, should ensure open capital markets where access is based on individual company merit. I'm going to do this in detail. This is really good. I've never seen this before. You know, so I'm not going to do it justice in 5 minutes. But in other words, what they're saying is that if you notice, everything they're talking about is a government regulatory burden. That's what's holding our oil supply. This is not an oil problem. This is a government problem, you know, because they should have access to capital. Everything they say is an overly burdensome regulatory procedure. Here's another one. Number six, dismantle supply chain bottlenecks. You know, insurrectionist Brandon should rescind steel tariffs that remain on imports from U.S. allies, as steel is a critical component of energy production, transportation, and refining. Wait a minute, you can't get steel for pipelines and for trucks and things? That's crazy. Seven, advance lower carbon energy tax provisions. Yeah, that's that carbon tax thing. In other words, you pay a tax on how much carbon you're releasing, even though it's plant food. Congress should expand and extend Section 45Q tax credits, I don't know what they are, for carbon capture, utilization, and storage and development. I'll have to look more into that. I'm losing my voice, so I'm going to be shutting up soon. Number eight, protect competition in the use of refining technologies. Well, there we go. The insurrection should ensure that future federal agency rulemakings, regulations again, right, continue to allow U.S. refiners to use the existing critical process technologies to produce the fuels needed for global energy markets. You don't screw up with the refining. End permitting obstruction on natural gas projects. Well, here you go. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, should cease efforts to overstep its permitting authority. In other words, they're acting illegally under the Natural Gas Act, and should adhere to traditional considerations of public needs
as well as focus on direct impacts arising from construction. In other words, they're stopping natural gas projects. And the last one, number 10, advance the energy workforce of the future. Congress and the Brennan insurrection, my words, should support the training and education of a diverse workforce through increased funding of work-based learning and advanced STEM programs to nurture the skills necessary to construct and operate oil, natural gas, and other energy infrastructure. In other words, chemical engineers, civil engineers, physicists, biologists, you know, because if oil is an organic chemical, microbiologists, if they're going to make algae into fuel, all these things would be increased. We should have grants for that. This is a good plan. I'm going to leave this thing up. This is pretty good. What do y'all think?
Well, I think, like you just said a few minutes ago, this is government. This is a government problem, not oil problem, because we're so blessed to have so much oil in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to my husband the other day. I said, what's going to happen there, given all this reserve oil as quickly as possible to hurt mm-hmm. our country? But my husband said, don't worry about it. He goes, as soon as Trump comes back, which is hopefully pretty soon, all the pumps will be thrown on and we can pump as fast as you can think of. We got so much oil.
Well, he can overturn everything here. Brandon did, but he can't come back before January 21st of 2023, because if he does, he won't be able to run in 2024. But if he does come back January 1st,
the plan,
21st, then he'll be able to run again.
No, the plan is he's going to finish the next 2 years, starting January, and then he's going to run again for 4 more years. So we're going to have a total of 6 years with him.
Well, the Constitution's going to be in the way of that. You can't do that. If he comes
it's
back,
okay, because everything was illegal. Everything was illegal that
so
is
you're
going
saying
on
he
right
gets,
now.
He gets a term because he yeah.
They
let me,
stole
his
election.
Oh, I know that.
They
but the,
stole
but,
his election.
Okay, all right. I mean, it would be interesting to see how that does work out. All right, let me take a break for a little bit. I need a glass of water.
All right.
So I'll be back in a little bit. So mute yourselves, and hopefully Cassandra will be back. We'll be talking about this local ordinance for Milton. All right, here we go. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Strike Force energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. All right, so I'm going to bring Cassandra right on because I want to make sure she gets a chance to chat. She's a busy morning too. And so we'll take what time is available and let's make my other folks live. Josie and Pianchi is also joining us as well. Cassandra, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And yes, I apologize. I'll only be able to give you a few minutes, but I thought it was important enough to come on. So.
Yeah. Well, tell the story. Tell us as much as you can in the time you have. And let's explain this new ordinance.
This is about the city of Milton becoming a certified local government, just like many other towns in the state of Florida have done. It is a tool to help protect history and heritage through historic preservation for the city of Milton, and it provides not only increased property rights for people who are not currently located in the historic district, but it also provides tools through the state to help the community. And that happens through grants and monies that are available to the program that are otherwise not available if you are not a certified local government. And basically by becoming a certified local government, you as a community are stating, we care about our history, our heritage, and we are willing to put tools in place to help protect, you know, our, just that, I mean, our history, our buildings and, you know, properties that are deemed historic or let's say qualify as being historic through an entity, you know, larger than the city of Milton. So having said that, I'd like to just refute the first part that a small group of people purposely put out false information and want to misunderstand. This
refute away.
And the ordinance,
please do. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So this program, I'm talking fast because I'm very limited on time. So I apologize for that.
That's okay.
But this ordinance is a citywide ordinance. But what that means is anyone in the city of Milton that feels that their property, whether it's their home, a commercial property, whatever it is, if they feel that their property could be deemed or qualify as being historic, program simply allows them the property right for they themselves to participate in the program. The property owner is the only person that can choose to participate in the program. There's no government overreach. No one's going to do it for you. They can't. So only the property owner can decide to opt into this program. The other part is, people are saying, oh, any building over 50 years old could be deemed historic. This is an HOA. False information, more lies. This is not like a subdivision HOA. So just because you may own a property, let's say your home is in an older neighborhood, it's over 50 years old, there are a multitude of standards that must be met. One, you as the property owner, you must make an application. Again, no one can do it for you. You fill out the application, you must meet the criteria, and you can either be deemed as a contributing structure or not. It's optional. So I hear the argument about, oh, it's government overreach, this goes against property rights. That argument itself is false, because by saying or perpetuating that argument, you're actually going against people who should have the same property rights as the people who have properties currently located in the Milton Historic District. So throw that property rights argument out the door. That is just craziness. Now, let's say you are already bound by city ordinance for historic preservation that governs the nationally recognized historic district. So this ordinance does address that. It does make some changes, but actually I see it as a benefit to the property owners because it better defines the property owner's rights. It better defines the, let's say, oversight, right, duties of the Historic Preservation Board that would be overseeing this ordinance. And as a person over the years who has suffered from ill attacks and, ill attacks by
with
authority complexes, and I'll name the names, Mary Golden, Teresa Messick, who currently serves on the board, and, oh, gosh, I'm forgetting their other little buddy's name that was on there.
Well,
the
names aren't as important. Do they have a group that they represent something?
Let me tell you why the names are important.
Okay.
Because Mary Golden, who was the whatever she was, the chairperson for the local Republican Party, is
mm-hmm.
one of the main people, along with Cindy Booth, who put out a lot of false information, out-and-out lies, about what this ordinance does. She stirred up the Republican Party. She stirred up public in general. They came to the meetings. We've been dealing with this for over 8-9 months. We have not only listened to all of them, but we have created an ordinance that took all of their concerns into account. The city attorney was there. He did his best, and God love him. He did his best to try and help some of these people understand legalities and some of the terms. They're so afraid of certain, you know, words and what they mean. And it was very difficult for them to really gain an understanding. But I want you to know, from the first time I was on the board and I stepped up to be on this board because of the baloney that I have seen over the years of the people that I named going against property owners' rights, people in general, and that's why I got on the board. And I have stood up for all of that, for every aspect, you know, of this ordinance. When we got finished, for the most part, doing our part, they filled the room in the beginning, and a lot of the people from the Republican Party just got ticked off because they were lied to. And Mary Golden stepped down from her position because she received so much flack, you know, from it. Now,
mm-hmm.
I'm a Republican. And I've only participated in the local Republican Party stuff like maybe once or twice over the years because I've seen who's been in charge, like her and other people in this community that I think actually give the Republican Party a bad name. But back to the ordinance, when we finished with it, there was only a handful of people. Miss Farrow, you know, who came with Mary Golden, and she's basically taken on the fight for Mary Golden. She's continued, and it's clear she doesn't have a good understanding, you know, of it. And there were about 4 or 5 other people. That's it. We still have people that they just don't get it, and I don't understand. How many times can we speak the words, and honestly, Greg, in one of the meetings, I told Janet Coulter and, you know, a couple of them, I'm like, listen, we're not here to be your tutor. I can't help if you, you know, have comprehension, you know, problems or not. And if you're so worried about how it affects you, even though they don't live in or own historic properties. And the biggest point, here it is.
Absentee landlords.
They don't want to participate It doesn't affect you. If you're in the historic district, you're already affected. You know, sell your property if you don't want to be in the historic district. You're already governed by standards. This actually better defines it for you. And then if you are even more concerned, get an attorney. Have him explain it to you. I honestly don't know what else, you know, we can do. We have people that I think they're just pushing a national agenda on the local community. They've jumped on board. This is government overreach. We don't want it. You're going against our property rights. And I refute that because let's just say 50% of the people, which of course this is way overshot, but let's just say 50% of the people in Milton own properties that could be deemed historic. The other 50% already live or own historic properties. Why should the people that are already in the district deemed as contributing structures have all the property rights and no property rights given towards being deemed as a contributing structure to all the other people? How is that fair? How do you even have that argument for property rights?
Yeah, I have to learn more about the actual, rights, privileges, and special things about having historic property. But I read through the ordinance kind of quickly because it's 28 pages. I couldn't find anything really objectionable. You know, my biggest objection,
neither
strangely.
Neither did they.
Yeah. So let me ask
neither
you a couple quick questions.
That's my point.
Yeah.
Yeah, they came in with the false accusations, and when the majority of them that understood it, they all left ticked off that they had been put in that position and riled up.
Yeah, it's all about choice and options. I'm guessing this better
that's
defines.
That's all it is.
That's
exactly, yep. And here's the other big part. Mm-hmm. So it actually saves. So I heard Shannon Rice and some people, what's this going to cost? Well, the cost is very minimal. The city staff is, they already have those figures, and maybe Shannon should talk to city staff and find out the actual figures.
She can come on the show and talk too. She used to be on the show all the time, so
yeah,
Shannon's always welcome.
Because we have the CRAs and we have the historic district,
mm-hmm.
city staff already has the job of this oversight, right? And the cost is minimal. The cost could go up a little bit, but the state also offers $50,000 in assistance for staff time. Okay?
That's not bad.
Let's just say it costs like $5,000. Well, $5,000 could come out of the CRA funds downtown, one of the uses that they're supposed to use.
CRA. What's that stand for so people know?
CRA. Community Redevelopment Area, your downtown. Okay. So my tax dollars downtown go into a TIF fund, a CRA fund. They can only be spent in the downtown. So that $5,000 could easily be absorbed into that fund.
Okay.
The other part of that is when you become a certified local government, there are more grant opportunities available. And in the state, let's just say if there's overages of monies for certain programs, they can only be distributed to towns that are a certified local government. The bigger part is if you are a CLG, then you qualify on grants, especially for historic preservation, where you do not have to have a match. This year alone, Division of Historic Resources, just one grant alone, up to $500,000. Other grants have been put out. If we were a CLG, we would not have to match the funds. So let's just say there's a $500,000 grant made available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we might have a project for $250,000. We would have to match it unless we're a CLG. Then there's no match. You can listen to city meetings and hear their grant writer get up and speak to the council all the time. We have this grant available to us, and there's no match required, or this grant is available to us, but there is a match. But if we were a CLG, there is no match. Local entities, nonprofits, all use the Train Depot. Train Depot has just missed out on a couple of grants this year because they don't have the funds to provide the match. If we were already a CLT and your churches downtown, your historic churches, your other nonprofit organizations, so any flow through in that area, and so you have a few people that are spouting misinformation again. That's the bottom line. That's the overview of basically what I can tell you and what's, you know, at stake without going word by word, which is what we did. We went word by word, listened to the public, had attorney input, covered it.
Oh, no, I went through it. And I said, well, I'm looking for objections. I'm looking for, like, government overreach, like you said. I said, I really didn't find that. I went through it. And I said, well, this provision's good and that provision's good. And by the time I was done with it, it's like, well, where's the problem here? Yeah. Let me just do a couple quick things because, you know, like I say, I know you're short on time.
The very first meeting.
Hold on. I just want to get, when's the meeting tonight? When's the meeting tonight? And how's the vote look that you know from the city council?
The meeting is tonight at City Hall at 5:30.
Okay.
And this isn't the last. This is, as far as I understand right now, this is not the last public input on the CLT because I'm not exactly sure if the city has determined if it has to go before the planning board, but let's just say city votes in the CLG tonight. It may have to go before the planning board, which is another opportunity for public input.
Okay.
Then it may or may not have to go back to the state for a final review. So I don't really think that tonight is the end all, and there'll be more public input opportunities. But what you'll hear tonight are people that are either just spouting the same thing, even though it's already been answered, and it's just misinformation. And mostly it's because a handful of people that think that this is going to save Milton from the four lane. It in no way saves Milton from the four lane. And for some of them, that's the only reason why they're fighting it. The others are the people that have been, you know, riled up under, you know, misinformation and a lack of understanding. And
do you know how the vote's going to go? Any projections on the vote so we can either be concerned or not concerned?
No, the only thing I can tell you right now is most people, you know, have supported it, but you never know until the vote happens.
Okay.
But I apologize, Greg. I'm in a caregiver situation, and
I understand.
Am being summoned, and I have
well,
to leave.
We'll get you back. Anyway. We'll get you back when you have more time because we have more to talk about. I'll just leave you with this thought. The historic district is too small.
Yes.
We need to make it bigger.
Well, this is not expanding the district. All it
does
is allow for other people to opt in. That's all it does.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Have a great
Thanks
day.
For your time.
Right.
We'll talk later.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye now. Yeah, and that's you know, and I've looked at the ordinance is available. If anybody wants to check this out, let me see if I can it's ordinance number 1979-22 and it's available somewhere in the City of Milton website. I just couldn't find it. And I'm sorry Cassandra didn't have more time, but that's why I wanted to get the meeting in when it is and any kind of prognosis of what's going on. It sounds like it's going to go through and it should. Because there's nothing really in here. But those, for people that know Milton, the actual historic district is not that big. It's really the downtown area and up to the Blackwater River. But I would expand it. We have a couple of main streets for those that know the local area. Stewart Street to the west, Park Avenue to the north, and Canal Street south of Caroline Street, which they're calling Highway 90, down to Old Baghdad Highway. That's what I'd make the historic district, be about twice as big as it is now. I'm all for this. I'm all for historic preservation. I think that if people want to designate their house as historic, that'd be great. The question I didn't answer, because I want to make sure we got the meeting times and the place in, is whether the, you know, whether if it's a historic designation, does that stay with the owner? And the next owner has to reapply, or does it stay once it's designated historic? Does it stay historic designation? But I think the houses outside the historic area can become historic houses because there's a lot of beautiful homes in Milton that are not in the district. I didn't, like I said, I didn't realize how small the district was, but it looks like it should be about twice as big as it is now. And I'm all for it. You know, I grew up in Lexington, Massachusetts, which has the Battle Green. That's a national historic shrine. Basically, it's one of the seven places in the country where you can fly a flag 24 hours a day by an act of Congress. You know, Boston, the Freedom Trail, you know, is historic. you know, I lived in San Francisco. They have the, what is it? Not the 49ers, the Golden Gate Trails. I forgot what it's called. I should know. I was a tour guide, right? You know, I used to take people to the Chinese fortune cookie factory, you know, in Chinatown. That was part of the Freedom Walk or whatever it was called. San Francisco is a historic area, you know, not what's happening to it now, but I mean, some beautiful places there. Most of the places I've lived have historic areas. So I'm all for historic preservation. Doesn't mean you don't stop operating. Doesn't mean you can't buy and sell property. Doesn't mean you can't, you know, have really prosperous businesses. In fact, some of the most prosperous businesses are in historic areas. Faneuil Hall Market in Boston, the in San Francisco, the Ferry Building, which was the second busiest passenger terminal in the country behind Grand Central Station, when that operated before the Bay Bridge and the Golden Gate Bridge were built in 1936. Historic. Now it's a massive, you know, food, gourmet restaurant area, crazy hat shops, and a farmer's market three times a week. Pike Place Market in Seattle. Historic. Historic building. That's the place for the fish market, where the guys throw fish at each other. It's really hysterical, you know. So all these things are so I am all for historic areas. I'm all for preserving them, and I'm all for, you know, having new businesses and old buildings. But we need to have – there's something called a Berryhill Bypass. For those who don't know Milton, we have a two-lane road going across, and there are historic buildings on either side of that two-lane road, because when it was built, it's probably built during the wagon days, you know, so there's no need for anything else. But there's a bypass that's just slightly to the north of that, that would increase two more lanes for all those people that can't stand, you know, waiting for half an hour in traffic, you know, twice a day for the very short commute. And they want to ruin our town for a four-lane highway through our town for the two times a day for like half an hour each, when it actually gets crowded. And it does get crowded. But you don't screw your town over for a slight traffic jam twice a day. That's not right. Anyway, so all these things are coming in. I wish I had more time with Cassandra. I'll get her back so we can talk about this. So let's go to our panel. Pianki and Josie are still here. Did what you heard make sense to you? I don't know if you heard, especially if you heard yesterday's show too with Angie on, who was more against it. And so now we got both, I think, views pretty well presented, both for and against. And I'm for the proposal because I love historic areas. I think that'll be good for the city. And other folks are against it. Anybody who's against it and wants to call me, feel free. 215-383-3832. We also have live chat. And live chat, nobody seems to be using these days. You just go to the bottom of the broadcast page and type in your message. Of course, it's only here when we're live. It doesn't work when we're podcast, obviously. But mm-hmm. I think she presented the views pretty well. Comments?
Yeah.
What do you think?
She sure did, and she has a passion to rescue Milton. And I live in Milton myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You live in the middle of Milton. So, you know, you're like right there. Mm-hmm. I think this, like I said before, this government is corrupt and it's all about money and control. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to listen to people. Are you kidding me? They don't want to listen to anybody. It's whatever they want. And maybe if they stop bringing so many illegals, we don't need to widen the roads, you know, in Milton.
Well,
it's
historic.
And it's beautiful.
The road thing is, the road. My thing is we got a perfectly good interstate highway. You can go around Milton. You don't have to drive through it with your Mack trucks and, you know, your big things like that and your Peterbilts and your these huge trucks. So if I want to get the trucks out of here, I want to talk to her about that. I want to increase the size of the historical area, and I want to make it more pedestrian-friendly, make it more walk-friendly, bring in more businesses here in these beautiful old buildings. The Imogene Theater is here. This gorgeous 1912 theater was built the year the Titanic sank. That's how old this thing is, right? You know, and across the street from that is the old courthouse, which we could turn into the courthouse market. We could fill that with restaurants and businesses and gourmet places and, you know, like I say, restaurants from around the world and have a farmer's market out front. It'd be a huge draw, especially right behind that's where they have the free concerts, you know, in the spring and the fall. There's so much that can be done here. The potential is unbelievable. I'd like to – there's a big lot right beside the Imogene Theater. That'd be a great place for an underground parking garage. You know, go down four levels. We could bring in a lot of people and then walk.
Underground in Florida?
Yeah.
With a high
you can't do
water
it in Florida?
Table?
Ooh, I didn't think about that. That's a good point. Maybe it won't work underground. Hey, listen, they built the first underground parking garage in San Francisco on the San Andreas Fault. So, you know, I mean, what, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, but if that's what the people desire, then it mm-hmm. should be put into effect.
Yeah. But you could maybe make a triple level. It wouldn't be that high, you know, if you had a three-story parking garage. You know, no fees, no gates, no nothing like that. But just three, you know, or we run like, I don't know. I mean, I would love to see a water taxi between Pensacola and Milton. That'd be kind of fun. That might be expensive, though. But we've got a river right here, you know, or maybe make a parking place on the other side of the river, you know, with a shuttle that runs during concerts and things like that.
Yeah, Cheryl's good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
Cheryl's
but I think there already is parking across the street from the Imogene Theater. We just need to make it like a triple decker. I think because they'll be at three times the cars and three times the business. People will come in here, you know, and they could carpool. They could do all kinds of things. But the potential of this place is unbelievable. I mean, it really is, you know. But I'm all for historic preservation.
Yeah,
I
have an international food court.
Yeah. Well, that's what you know, we've got this courthouse. We've got this courthouse right across the street. It's big. It's the county courthouse. Well, I mean, how many Thai, Indonesian, Brazilian, you know, Icelandic, New Zealand restaurants can we put in there? We can have places from all over the world. We can make it an international culture center. We could have a local food.
Yeah,
we could serve, you know, gator
and
we could serve gator and snake. You know, from the Blackwater River.
Key lime pie.
Key lime pie. Well, I get that all the time. That's part of the reason I live in Florida. You know, but what, Jackie? Let me ask you about the historical places you've been. I mean, does St. Louis have a historic designated area?
Not a historical designated area, but they have a lot of historical sites, like the old courthouse where the Dred Scott decision was made. You've got the Bush's Garden, called Grant's Farm, where General Grant. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's in the old Transportation Museum, man, where you can see some of the old steam locomotives.
Hmm.
I really get a kick out of them.
Well, I love trains.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a steam train when I was a kid. I think I've told this story. We went to this maple sugar farm. And I was 6 or 7 years old. And my face, because I had my face, I hung my face out the window like all the other boys did because it was fun. We all had black faces because we had the smoke was like going right by us. We thought it was so cool. So we had smoke dust all over our hands and, you know, it was great. Then we got to, the maple sugar farm and they had this huge pot of boiling sap. And they took like ladles and they'd ladle the maple sugar still boiling, you know, right on the snow. So it cooled instantly and crystallized in the world's best maple sugar right there on the snow, you know. So, and it was on a steam train. We took a steam train out to this wonderful maple farm. So I love steam trains. I love trains. I've traveled the United States by train. I've traveled Europe by train. You know, I'll travel anywhere by train. Trains are fabulous because you meet people and you get to talk.
Oh, yeah, I like trains, too. I want to take the Amtrak down the southern route up the west coast, across the northern, back into Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
That's a several-day trip. I like to do that.
Well, yeah. Well, I was gone a month. I mean, I had a three-city excursion pass, and I added another city, and, of course, I met friends along the way. I'd stay, like, a couple of weeks in one place, and, you know, friends would pick me up, and we'd tour around for a while. So I saw part of the country. This is back in the late 80s. Before flight school, actually, it was like the last crazy vacation I had before flight school. Yeah, I went everywhere. I had a blast all around the outside of the country. San Francisco to Portland to Chicago to Boston to Washington to New Orleans to Los Angeles to San Francisco. Yeah, it was great. Look,
or you can even take the old Route 66 route from Chicago.
I want to do it in a Corvette. Okay, so all right, now who are the stars of Route 66. Let's do a little TV trivia here.
I can't remember the name, but that
George Maharis
like
and Martin Milner. Oh yeah, how's that for trivia? Get your kicks on Route 66. Who sang that?
Who was that?
Nat King Cole.
I did.
I'm just in the trivia mood. Don't mind me. Anyway, I really was hoping Cassandra would stick around longer for this. But let's get Josie in the conversation if you're not muted and busy. Local preservation. I mean, I think it's critical. And I think it'll be not only a great economic boom, but history. We need to preserve our history because history is forever. You know, ownership is temporary, but history is forever. And I don't want to lose our history because a bunch of people. Well, Josie, let me ask you. Here's a more direct question. We have a problem in this county of developers paying off county commissioners to put in massive new housing developments, and they're flooding and they're causing all kinds of problems. There's unrestrained growth here. I see this measure as protecting our historic district and our city, so at least part of the city is protected from the unrestricted growth. What if these county commissioners or city council members sell us out and they start putting in condos along the riverfront in downtown Milton, and they start to they demand a four lane? We'll see. We have them do that, though. This is why the historic designation is so critical. And I'll talk to Cassandra about that, too. But I don't want a bunch of corrupt county officials taking over our city officials and bringing in a bunch of ridiculous development like they're doing in the rest of the county to our beautiful mm-hmm. historic district here. And this, and people are wondering, you know, why are you talking about this, Greg? Well, because every, you look at any county in this country, any old city, it should have a historic district. New Orleans has the French Quarter.
Yeah.
Well, who would go to New Orleans if it wasn't for the French Quarter unless they had a Super Bowl?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the French Quarter is it.
Well.
Right?
Yeah. But, you know, these people try to get away if we let them. And like she was saying, everybody left. Only five people left, you know? It's what happens.
Yeah. I didn't know it's such a small opposition.
People don't want to participate. Greg, it's the same thing that happens in our school. Wait. Greg,
you know, and
it's the same thing that happens in our school. The uh-huh. parents don't have time. They don't get involved. And guess who's taking over their own children? The government and the school, the corrupt, mentally ill teachers that want to make our kids transgender, and the parents don't know much about it because they're not involved.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
what happens with the Republicans or the Patriots. They
well,
don't want to get involved. They're afraid.
Well, look what Cassandra was saying, too. And Cassandra's a friend of mine, just for full disclosure here. But she feels the same about Republicans that I do. I mean, I got thrown off the stage at a Republican speech they invited me to because I wasn't a registered Republican at the time. Well, I'm registered now until after the primary, and then I'm going to go back to being independent. But I want to vote in the primary. You know, I want to vote against and vote for certain people. And I'll talk about that, you know, as we get more into it. But the thing is that the Republicans, they don't support Action Radio. They don't sponsor our bills. You know, the Republicans that you think are for smaller government, as they say, they're not supporting our bill to create an illegal alien-free zone of Santa Rosa County. Neither the city people, neither the county people, neither any of the Republican groups. And there are still Republican groups here. This is a Republican area. Well, why aren't they supporting that? Are they for
yeah.
illegal aliens?
Yeah.
You know, so they want my
yeah.
support, but
it's
they're
bad.
Not willing to back the bills that will make this place
Step
better.
Up. Yeah, you're right.
So I don't have any use for them either.
Anyway, good show, Greg. I got to go because it's going to be loud, and I don't want to be on. I have to get on the expressway now, so I'll be getting ready.
Are you going to yell in Spanish?
Thank
you
for having me again.
Are you going to curse in Spanish while you're driving?
Oh, no, I don't curse.
Well, I'm just curious. I just wonder what we're missing.
I did a long time ago. All right,
okay,
God
bye.
Bless. Talk to you soon.
God bless you
okay,
too. Thanks,
I'll Josie. Continue listening.
Okay,
bye-bye, Bianchi. Bye.
So, Bianchi, what do you think? Historic preservation. Have you been to New Orleans? You've been there frequently, right? I'm guessing.
Well, this is one of those things, Greg.
Meaning what?
I think I would like to see. I would hope that Milton does do something to. You know, one thing you could do is forewarn the developers that we're going to impose a tremendous tax on this new development, and that might scare them off.
Well, as long as they don't try and, you know, develop my town out of what it is, and this is what my danger, because I want to put a four-lane freeway through here, and that's going to destroy the town. That'll destroy any chance of people walking through it. You know, this is supposed to be a walkable, historic district. You know, that's what makes towns work. People like to go places they can walk. You know, you take that away, and it becomes a huge problem. You know, so there's a fight. Most people, I think, are for the fact of keeping this city historic. The people that are against it drive through here anyway. They don't stop. They just want to be able to, they want their commute shortened, so they're willing to sacrifice our city, our beautiful historic district, just so they can save 10 minutes off their drive time. Well, screw you. Go around. You don't like it? The few times that it's busy, go around. And we're already looking at a bypass, you know, to take traffic north of the city, so it doesn't have to go through it, and that's where the truck should go. You know, so I mean, we're working on ways around this. But historic, you know, you look at Chuck Maron. I'm going to try and get him back on. Charles Maron, he was on the show, I think, 2 years ago. He left a video, you know, that why would you widen a road for half an hour a day? That's insane. You screw your town over for that little bit. But we do need more business here. They do need to encourage either with taxes or something to bring more business in. Let me play my Milton promo. I haven't done this for a while. So we're kind of vamping here because everybody shortchanged us on time. Peter wasn't here. You know, Cassandra had to leave early. So let me play my Milton promo. This is my contribution to making this place better. And we'll be right back in a bit. This is Greg Penglis, creator of Action Radio for my town, Milton, Florida. Milton, it's where I live. It's where you can live too. It's where you can bring a new business, especially a business that helps our downtown historic district. We have everything in Milton. We have the Blackwater River. We have the Imogene Theater, built in 1912
and still booking national acts. We have Scoops Ice Cream. We have Boomerang's Restaurant, where I get my favorite Thai chicken pizza. We have an outdoor stage for music acts and free concerts by the river. The Blackwater Bistro will keep you in steak and seafood indefinitely. We have brew pubs creating great craft beers and giving us all a place to relax and talk. But it's more than just stuff and food and buildings. It's people. Remember the show Cheers, where everybody knows your name? It's that kind of place. So if you are tired of the cities, of the traffic, the frenetic pace of life that doesn't seem to get you anywhere, if you want a small city that has incredible potential, that combines the best of historic buildings and modern, fun, small retail shops and restaurants, and a great waterfront, plus who knows what for the future, take a look at historic Milton, Florida, in the Panhandle, near Pensacola, and the world's greatest beaches on the Emerald Coast of the Gulf of Mexico. Milton is going through a renaissance. Maybe you can be part of making it happen.
Yeah, even left a little music at the end to do a little tag. That's my contribution. That's my contribution to Milton. And so I'm in it for this town, and I just wish the town was more in it for me. So anybody who wants to sponsor our show, you know, email me, greg@writeyourlaws.com. You can leave a live chat message, and I'll pick that up before the show ends. And so there's a lot of things people can do. But the whole purpose of this show, you know, one of the main purposes is to help before Milton, and that's how I do it. So you want to know how I do it? That's how I do it. So I got a promo that y'all can copy. I've got it on a YouTube. Anybody can use it, share it, and go from there. But it's just interesting that, like I say, the Republican Party is not helping. You know, they're not helping me. They don't. It's like they don't want any solutions. And this is why I'm so afraid of what they're going to do if they get Congress back in the fall. They're not going to do anything. They're going to give power over to Democrats. They're going to have a wimpy speaker in Kevin McCarthy. You know, and they're going to keep Mitch McConnell in the Senate, and they'll keep their establishment at the expense of this country again. That's my big fear. So you like my promo, Pianki?
I think too much emphasis sometimes is put on federal officials rather than your local and your state. Because really, that's where it begins. You know, we're talking about people names that some folks don't even know who the hell they are.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas
no, I agree.
Your local and also your state representation goes unchallenged. That's where the challenge should be put forth, because they have the ability to put up the stop sign and say no, no go to the federal government.
Yeah. Absolutely agree. Yeah. We got about 18 minutes left. So if anybody wants to change topics or do anything else, I'm just sort of looking through all my articles down here. What do you think of Brandon dashing off to Saudi Arabia? What do you think is going to happen with that trip? I think it's horribly embarrassing myself.
Probably trying to reestablish what they canceled when Hillary lost the election.
Reestablish what exactly? I think you're onto something.
Huge donation to the Clinton Foundation.
Oh, that's an interesting thought. That never occurred to me. Good. Okay. So how did that work? Were the Saudis contributing to the Clinton Insurrection Foundation thing? What were they doing with it?
Well, yeah, they were buying favoritism, but when she lost, they requested that their money be returned.
Oh, that's interesting. See, I don't think that's going to work. I mean, the Crown Prince, I forgot his name, but for everything I've heard about him, he's smart. He's absolutely pro-Saudi. The U.S. press, the leftist press, can talk about is Adnan Khashoggi and, you know, ordering his death. You know, people say, well, that's a horrible thing. I say, well, really? Well, how many deaths did the CDC order with these vaccines? 1 million? You know, or plus the treatment, the remdesivir ventilator treatment. I mean, they killed 1 million people in the hospitals. You know, you want to talk about government ordering the assassination of people? How many people does the government have killed all the time? You know, through liberal cities, you know, so they're going to condemn this guy for one person. Yeah, it wasn't to make it right, but I'm just saying in the economy of scale, it's no comparison, you know, and so, and I don't know what he was doing against Saudi Arabia. I mean, we don't know that either, but the point is that the Saudi prince is revolutionizing his country. They realize they can't survive on oil alone. They're trying to modernize, they're industrializing, and they've got treaties with Israel. They're part of the Abraham Accords, and that's what Trump did. So Trump unites all these countries, you know, United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Morocco, Egypt, Jordan, you know, I don't know how much Syria. Syria's kind of a different place. But they're all in these Abraham Accords. They're talking to and trading with Israel, and they're happy to do it. And then, you know, Bozo comes along and says, well, we have to give the Palestinians their own state. We need a two-state solution. You know, I'm surprised he hasn't called for the U.S. Embassy to be moved from Jerusalem. They'll probably do that on the trip, too. But what is the Obama administration, and I use that term, you know, properly, think they're doing with Brandon in Saudi Arabia? What do these people think they're going to accomplish?
Well, other than that, the Saudis seemingly is pretty much trying to reach a status, a state of being self-dependent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have done building there in that area, which rivals the best that we've ever known. And they're spreading out into the desert, turning those desert areas into farmland and production. So they're moving ahead. I would suspect that they would begin to put in alternative energy sources like solar and, of course, thermal, but it stands to be seen.
And that's, see, Saudi Arabia is a great place for solar energy because it's dry as a desert. It's the perfect place for solar, you know. But solar should be local. Solar should be small. Solar should be neighborhoods. Solar should be individual in your houses. But these big solar plants that bake birds when they fly by just so they can heat a water tower, that's insane. Same thing with wind. Wind should be a local power source. You know, your little 2-foot wind generator on your rooftop. Every rooftop had a little 2-foot, you know, blade. You're not going to kill every bird that flies by, and every house is going to get some additional power. It's a supplement. It's not a cure. It's not a sole source.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I have a funny suspicion that you're actually putting a drain on the sun, but that needs to be put further investigation. But
no, the sun the sun generates energy independently of our absorption of solar radiation. But I'll tell you what some people have said. And this is kind of an interesting thought, that if you have wind generators, you're going to take away the force of the wind. And without the force of the wind, you're going to have a problem because, you know, all of a sudden the air currents aren't going to move. The water's not going to be distributed worldwide. I mean, hurricanes take all that solar energy from the equator and disperse it up north so it doesn't destroy the earth, you know, by having too much energy in the center and not enough at the poles. So hurricanes are actually a vital energy transfer. Most people don't know that. You know, but do I believe that wind generators take the force out of the wind? No, I don't, because air moves from high pressure to low pressure. You know, and the air is going to move anyway,
well,
whether you got a wind generator or not. The air is going to move.
Well, I think it does because the blades, it takes wind pressure in order to turn the blade. If you took that blade out of the middle between where the wind started and where it ends up, you would have more wind pressure. So a lot of the energy has to be absorbed in those blades.
Uh-huh.
So whoever made that assumption has a good point.
Yeah, but air is a fluid, though, and a fluid goes to the area of least resistance. So isn't it more likely that the air would flow over the windmills rather than through them?
Well, but if that's the case, then the blades wouldn't have the curvature that they have.
Oh, no, I'm not saying the blades don't get a certain amount of wind. I'm saying they do get a certain amount of wind. But what I'm saying is we don't know how much wind is passing over them. I don't know if anybody's ever measured that. Does the river stop at the rock? No, it goes around it. You know, it doesn't splash up on the rock and try and knock the rock over. It goes around the rock.
Yeah, but when it goes, around the rock, you decrease the – it's just like electrical current. You increase the pressure, but you decrease the current flow. But I think that, it has to. If you put enough wind generators within a concentration, it's going to have some effect on the wind flow before those generator was there.
But is it going to have enough to change the low pressure and high pressure areas that will stop the wind? I don't think so. Vertical. Well, see, wind is a result of a vertical action. High pressure brings air down. Low pressure brings air up. That's how thunderclouds are created. So the air moving from the high pressure to the low pressure area so that it can rise, it falls to the high pressure area, rises to the low pressure area. Is that going to be changed by air that might be slowed down along the way? So in other words, is less air available to rise to make bigger thunderstorms if there are a bunch of wind generators in the way?
Wind generation. wind generated operated on a horizontal flow of air.
That's what I'm saying. Right. But air, but the reason air is generated with vertical components.
Yeah, when the air moves, it's just like a fan. A fan only works because you got an electrical motor on it. If you depend on wind coming through one side and going through the fan and providing the same type of velocity, it just wouldn't happen.
Yeah. See, I'm not worried about those.
Wind,
mm-hmm.
If wind passes through an array of wind turbines, mm-hmm. well, yes, it's going to reduce that flow. It's going to cause some effect. Now, is this, I mean, just what that effect is, and if it's worth the while to go about then measuring it and raising a case is another thing.
See, that's what I'm curious about. You know, how much air flows around the wind farm and doesn't go through it? Would air be captured better if there were many smaller windmills as opposed to a few bigger ones? I don't know.
No, you don't know.
Doesn't it take more energy to turn a bigger windmill? Yeah. I think it would take more energy to turn a bigger windmill, which would make it less efficient. It certainly kills more birds.
Well, it's going to take a movement of air to turn those turbines. And mm-hmm. the reason why they make the blades so large, should I say long, is so that they can be captured by more airflow.
Yeah, but you can capture the same amount. If you had four windmills that equaled the same blade length as one big windmill, why would they capture any less air?
The longer the blade, the more leverage that you have. It's got to be a resistance there. So you have a longer blade,
right.
And then you have more leverage, and then you probably got a gearing mechanism inside where that armature can turn within those magnets in order to produce more electrical current.
Okay, so you're saying the greater resistance of the blades will turn slower. Okay, so the greater resistance of the larger blades creates more electricity than faster moving smaller blades.
Yeah, if you got smaller blades, you're going to have to turn faster. Then parts wear out, bearings and all that stuff. Makes a lot more noise.
Yeah, but there's less weight involved, so there might be less wear and tear. And the four of them, four might have the same impact as one. I don't know. We've got to look into the physics of wind turbines. That'd be another show.
Well, the weight actually helps you on the downside. Do a clock run faster from 12 to 6 than it does from 6 to 12?
Well, it's not supposed to, but it's an interesting thought. Yeah, gravity sucks.
It's going downhill.
Yeah. Well, now that'd be interesting. Now, see, they don't have variable pitch wind generators. That'd be too expensive. But can you imagine if they were like propellers where you could actually have a greater bite of the blade on the downstroke and a smaller bite on the upstroke to equalize the pressure on both sides of the blade? Because they don't have that right now, as far as I know.
Well, what you got is the momentum. The downward, that momentum is carried on the upside stroke of the blade, which helps it to reach the pinnacle, then it starts back down again where gravity assists it. So.
Right, so the downstroke should assist the upstroke. Anyway, we got 7 minutes left. This is fun. I can just see people like listen to us going, what are these guys talking about? Advanced physics of wind turbines. Yeah, you never know what you're going to get on this show. That's what happens when you get bright people together. All right. My favorite new reporter, Emerald Robinson, has an article I just came out 3 minutes ago, so even during the show. It talks about the global vaccine nightmare has just begun. We're going to get our doctor's panel Thursday, so that'll be in a couple of days. She says, I went to the nail salon this week, and there was a young woman working there who started weeping inconsolably in the corner. I asked the manager what was wrong. She just lost her mother, was the reply. She had died in her sleep suddenly, though she was perfectly healthy. This last weekend, I had attended a funeral of an old friend. He was perfectly healthy, too. And then he got late-stage pancreatic cancer, and he was gone a few months later. Scroll, scroll, scroll. That was the exact same story for another friend. He was healthy as a horse until he wasn't, because he, too, had suddenly developed late-stage pancreatic cancer. Not to mention a young and very fit mother I know who just got a checkup and was told she, too, has suddenly developed aggressive cancer in her early 40s. The perfectly healthy are getting bad cancers much too frequently now. The perfectly healthy are dying suddenly. What all of them shared was being vaccinated. Okay? Steve Kirsch on Substack has conducted a survey done by a third party, and the results are so disturbing that nobody in the corporate media will touch it. Well, let's read it, shall we? 10 million Americans have heart injuries. 10 million Americans have been hospitalized after taking the vaccines. 5 million Americans can't work after being vaccinated. At least 600,000 Americans died after getting vaccinated. And you're saying that the occasional mass public shooter, tragic as it is the biggest problem in this country? No. The biggest problem is government policy killing people. The whole COVID policy.
Well, that's
the
right.
Lockdowns. Yeah.
You have to
that move. Is the biggest problem. And the government is a mass murderer. Go ahead.
And what's bigger than that is that the news does not carry those services. You know, it's a funny thing. You can take the largest news service, CNN, MSNBC, and then you can go to a small town, a newspaper like Savannah Journal and stuff like that, and they all ratchet. They're very, very deplorable sources.
Well, they're
all by
the same people. You know, you look at Gannett, which owns like, I don't know how many hundred small papers used to be independent. They're not independent anymore. One of the last independent services on radio is us and various other people that are independent. But most of them are part of iHeart and Cumulus, and, you know, they have to suck up to their corporate masters, and we don't do that. And why do you think I got fired from my job at WBY? Yeah.
I was reading a Savannah newspaper from the town where Clarence Thomas is from, and I'd be damned, they are attacking him. So I finally found a way to get into the comment. I asked him, say, well, why don't you question the citizens of this town that you're saying are wanting to turn against Clarence Thomas and ask them what do they expect from him? And then I said, what law do they expect for Clarence Thomas to produce? I threw that in there deceitfully. But I'll be interested to see if that gets any follow-up.
Yeah. Let me give you the rest of this article real quick. So
news services
a,
that put this
what's that?
That put this ideology that people have that's totally wrong, and it brings about these sentiments that is what we have today. They just totally ignorant. It's a bunch of ignorance.
Well, we had that with that ordinance, the local county ordinance, to preserve our history, and people are saying, well, it's government overreach. No, it's not. Read the damn bill. Anyway, here's the executive summary from Emerald Robinson's report. Their latest poll from this is guy Steve. Let's quote him again here. Steve, who did this report? And then she's got anecdotal people. I know people that have been sick. Josie knows people. Her family members have died from the shot. You know, so and pancreatic cancer is one of the worst. Steve, here we go. Steve Kirsch. I'm going to have to look this up. I want to see if I can call Emerald Robinson. I really want to get her on the show. But the executive summary of Kirsch's report says 6.6% rate of heart injury for those who are vaccinated. 2.7% are unable to work after being vaccinated. That's over 5 million Americans. And there's over 10 million for the heart injury. 6.3% had to be hospitalized. That's over 10 million Americans. He says you're more likely to die from COVID if you've taken the vaccine. Think about that. You are more likely to die from COVID if you've taken the vaccine. Now, that seems like a little bit of a contradiction, doesn't it? Here we go. Almost as many, 77.4% households lost someone from the vaccines as from COVID. Almost as many lost someone from the vaccines as from COVID. And COVID, we know people were lost. 95% of the people that were lost to COVID were lost because they weren't given early treatments. That was banned by the very same government that's mandating the vaccine, which isn't a vaccine. So instead of giving hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin and giving early treatments and having people be fine, and so only maybe 50,000 people died of COVID, they've killed a million. So 950,000 people have died from COVID for nothing because they were given remdesivir and put on ventilators and killed by government policy in the hospitals. And they were paid for it. The hospitals were paid for doing that. Here we go. Almost as many people, 77.4%. If you believe that 1 million people in the U.S. have died from COVID, then this survey indicates that 750,000 people died from the vaccine. Ooh, there you go. And it says with people on the vaccine, with a 95% confidence of at least 600,000 deaths. There we go. Almost done. We've got, the show's almost over, but that's okay. Well, I'm going to finish this. Apparently, Blog Talk gives me a little extra time. They just don't let more calls come in, which is fascinating. All right. More than 5 billion people have been injected with at least one dose of a COVID vaccine. So if we extrapolate a 6% heart injury hospitalization rate from the survey, that would mean 300 million people have been affected. This is the world's greatest danger right now. It's not Ukraine. It's not Russia. It's COVID vaccines, right? If Dr. Malone, who I want to get on the show,
is correct, and the majority of vaccinated people have undiagnosed myocarditis, that's a swelling of the heart, that would mean three are at serious risk of sudden cardiac death. That's heart attack, folks. You can't imagine it, and I can't imagine it, but if that really happens to even a tenth of 3 billion people in the next few years, then we are talking about a world-altering event. It says, if you've been paying attention on social media or most of all on Substack, then you already know that this man-made disaster was happening on a vast scale because you've seen far too many posts of soccer players suddenly collapsing on the field or young people hooked up to machines at the hospitals after getting their first clot shot, just like me. And then you see an article down there of somebody horribly hooked up to a machine. I'll post this on the Action Radio group so everybody can take a look at it. It says, in fact, mortality rates for young people across Europe are rising dramatically. And yet another sign that the use of experimental COVID vaccines should be halted immediately. Healthy people are now dying so frequently and suddenly from heart failure that the totally corrupt corporate media, that's what Bianchi was talking about, has invested names like sudden adult death syndrome to account for, has invented names like sudden adult death syndrome to account for these obviously vaccine-related deaths. How many times have I come on the show when somebody's died and they don't list the cause? I say, that's a vaccine shot, obviously, right? And now toddlers are having seizures after getting vaccinated as well. Toddlers. You give this to your under 5-year-old, you should have your kids taken away from you. It says that's for vaccinated women who are pregnant. That's something Dr. Thorpe is absolutely against. They're experiencing miscarriages and stillbirths at much higher rates than in the past. All right, a little bit more. And like I said, I'm going to go over time a little bit because I want to get this in here. What has the American medical community done about this catastrophe? They have aided and abetted it the entire way. They have taken the big pharma blood money and the federal government's blood money, and they have stayed silent while they injected your friends and family with these deadly vaccines and watched them die. You know it, and I know it. When their patients asked for ivermectin to treat COVID, they denied them those prescriptions and treated them like deviants for asking, and they strongly recommended they get vaccinated instead. When injured people had the audacity to complain about their vaccine injuries, our doctors and nurses gaslighted them or told them to stay silent or told them they had no clue why they were having problems. It is the most shameful episode in the history of American medicine. I call it a medical holocaust. This is a medical government fascist holocaust. That's what this is. Article concludes, sudden deaths, infant seizures, blood clots, miscarriages, heart attacks, skyrocketing mortality rates, declining birth rates. You might think that the COVID virus has gone away, but the global vaccine nightmare has just begun. I'll post it as soon as that.
Okay, Greg, I think you're off the air. So
I think
I'll
so.
See you
no,
tomorrow.
But they let us extend a little bit. I found out we actually have some extra time. We just can't take more calls on the switchboard. So I can extend a little bit, so I might start doing that. Thank you, Bianchi. Great show. Appreciate it. Greg Pangos
okay.
For Action Radio. There we go. Talk to you tomorrow. blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And our website for all our legislation is www.writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. And if you want to contribute to us, you can get us at paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio. But better is if you're a company or an individual you want to advertise on the show, then just email me at greg@writeyourlaws.com. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock, World's Greatest Doctors panel Thursday, and then our Friday Crazy Show. And I will see you all tomorrow, 7 a.m. Central Time.